All right, let's proceed in an orderly manner. Wait, do I start today?
Nope.
You start today?
Yep.
Are you sure?
Nope.
Can I start today?
Sure.
That's nice of you.
Yeah,
it's my birthday wish.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Sneaky Dragon. My name is Ian Boothby.
And I'm David Dedrick.
There we go. All right. Wellness check. How are you doing?
Wellness check?
Yeah.
Better.
All right. Good.
I had a bad last weekend.
I'm very sorry to hear that. Yeah. I had a rough last couple of weeks as well. So let's go. Oh, first of all, before we do that, happy birthday to you.
Oh, thank you.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear David. Happy birthday to you.
Thanks.
Because it was your birthday yesterday.
It was. It was. And a funny thing happened on the way to my birthday.
No, all right.
Actually, at my birthday, which was that we've had for a long time these little discs that spell out happy birthday that you put the candles into. They're like little, I don't know, plastic things.
Sure, that, holders, candle, little, yeah, candle holders.
Candle holders, and then they're like round and they spell out happy birthday. Some of them have been lost. We don't know why. So Lisa spelled out payday on the cake last night. And so we sang happy payday to me yesterday.
Nice.
So yeah, it was nice. And it was my payday yesterday as well, so it really worked out. It was a great celebration.
It would have been good to have like a payday bar on top of it as well.
Our payday bar is really that great.
Or play the payday board game.
Oh, I don't know that.
Remember
one.
That one?
I don't.
Yeah, it was a little board game. And then you get to around the board and you'd hit payday and you go, payday! And you get paid. And you go back. You know, it's the rest of your stuff. It's a Monopoly without the boredom.
Ah, yes. Well, when we played Monopoly as kids, we did not play it properly at all. And so it was fast and kind of fun. It wasn't until I was older that people were like, oh, you're playing it all wrong. You have to play it like this. Oh, my God.
I just
the tedium.
Just ordered a guess. I think it's like Guess Who game. Do you know that one?
No.
It's not based on the band. that would be the Guess Who game. But it's one where there's all these faces and you do things like, does your person have glasses? And you go click, 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 no. Okay, does your person have blonde
hair? That sounds
familiar. Click, 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 no. And it goes down to the one person. But the way people have been playing it online, which I like, is like, would this person have needed a student loan? Okay, would this person, you can't do any physical descriptions.
Okay, okay.
You know, does this person still have more vinyl than any other type of, you know, music in their collection?
Is this person allowed around playgrounds?
Yes, that would be one. Like, would this person corner you at a party and tell you you don't really get Game of Thrones? Then click, 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 click. Huh. Yeah, it seems like a fun way to play
it. Yeah,
it
seems fun. It's a little harder, but it sounds fun.
Yeah, so that made me order said game. But what was your rough weekend?
Well, I want to know why your 2 weeks were rough.
Oh, I've just been having side effects of the drugs that I'm on.
Okay.
And the frustrating thing was I called the pharmacist at the AFib clinic, because I have AFib.
Yeah.
And mentioned these side effects to them. And the person said, yeah, I don't think this is related to that. And it's like, but it, you know, you don't want to argue. But
you know what? He thought you were telling AFib.
Yes. Yes. She did. Pharmacists can also be ignoring women who are ignoring you, not just men who are ignoring you. But yeah, it always like kicks in like about 10 minutes after I take these pills. So yeah. It's the pills. And okay. If it's not the pills, it's a reaction to the pills with something else I've got.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
The pills are for sure the trigger. And, you know, they just put me into a spin, like really dizzy, big mood swings.
Mm.
So I basically have to clear about an hour, maybe an hour and a half, where I'm just like, look, I'm useless for this amount of time because
wow.
Like I'm going to be reacting wrong. When it's nighttime, it basically gives me a sleep paralysis. So like something's going on and unless I really, really fight it, I can't get out of it.
Yeah.
The other night I tried to, cause Pia told me, you know, if you're going through this, let me know, you know? And so I tried and I was just a real mess after I like really struggled to break out of it. And
yeah.
And I was just like thrashing around and I couldn't stop thrashing because, you know, after I broke out of this thing. So yeah, I told them about this and they didn't think it was related. But over the last couple of days, it seems to have like eased up a bit. So that's good. But yeah, it's just been so annoying with these side effects.
Mm.
They've really been kicking in for like the last couple of weeks. Mm. But I have an appointment with the actual AFib cardiologist in eight, but it's in April. I just didn't want to have to wait that long, you know, and basically have all this time during a day where I'm useless.
Yeah.
You know, because I got quite a bit of stuff to do. And at the end of it, when the side effects end, at least in the afternoon, then I'm like exhausted, like really exhausted for at least an hour after that because of like dealing with the side effect stuff, because it just revs me up and then crashes me hard. So it's like, I got things to do. And I don't want to have like my brain hijacked. So so that's my my thing. Now back over to Dave Land.
last weekend. Well, on Friday at work when I was offloading the trailer, it was my fault. I made a error in judgment and I wrecked a door.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And so I felt terrible about it because I'm a person who feels terrible when I do things wrong. And so I was like beating myself up about it at work. And then I beat myself up about it that night at home. And then I did it on Saturday. I beat myself up some more. Laid awake for 2 hours in bed on Saturday night, writing a resignation letter. Because I was thinking, they're going to fire me. But if I resign, then I can get out of it. You know, then I don't have like being fired on my record. I just left the job for reasons unknown or unsaid.
That would be different for EI, right? If they let you go, it's a different situation than if you quit. Or is it?
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know. And then Sunday, you know, you started feeling a little better, but I would still think about it and just be like, sigh, or whatever like that. And then, but then Monday, it was kind of interesting because I was like, I ate lunch or something like that. And I was sitting on the couch, doom scrolling through Instagram reels. And this one came up. It was this Buddhist guy. And he's like, you know, have you made a bad mistake? Basically, it's like, yes, he's talking to me. But he's talking about how when we make a mistake, we can have two reactions. One is what I was going through, which is guilt and shame, you know, because you feel guilty that you broke something, but you also feel ashamed. You feel shame because, you know, part of your ego is in your work, you know, like how you perform at work, or at least for me, it is anyway. And so that's what he said. So that's this ego, like your guilt and your shame is all about how you're feeling about this thing. He said, what a person needs to do, and I can't remember the exact word he used. One word was remorse, but I can't remember the other word. But it was basically like wise remorse or thoughtful remorse or something like that, where you obviously feel sorry for what's happened, but use it as a lesson to not repeat your mistake, mm-hmm. you know, and to look past your error and to kind of, you know, take in all of you, not just this one thing, and that's right. Now you're defining you for a whole weekend. And it was just kind of nice to hear, and it was just sort of funny that it kind of popped up out of nowhere. You know, just, oh, Dave needs to hear this. Here it is.
And then you were open enough to hear it.
I guess that too.
That's
yeah,
a big part.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes the answer's in front of you, and you just don't see it because more. I'm busy beating myself up. I got stuff to do.
Yeah, stuff to do against me. I got to feel sorry for myself for a whole weekend. Yeah, and that was a long weekend too. So. You know, that was the family day weekend. So I was kind of like, oh, I've wasted the whole weekend kicking myself. But
how did your employers feel about it?
Well, I've not heard anything more about it. On Friday, like, obviously the warehouse manager was like, what are you doing? When it happened, you know.
Right.
Because it was, you know, it's a door.
That's how you react to a mistake.
It's a door that was sent to us that... You know, we don't have in stock, so by wrecking it, I've sort of, you know, now the customer can't get their door that right. they were expecting and stuff like that. So, you know, but he wasn't angry at me. He was more just like kind of like, oh, what's going on? Like, why are you doing that? And then it was kind of too late. So, I had to write, you know, I had to explain what happened to Edmonton. You know, write them an email and kind of, you know, and I just wrote an email. It's very basic. You know, he just said, don't get into what happened too much. Just explain. Mm-hmm. Door was damaged, da da da, you know. And then I guess he was talking to the branch manager who manages two different branches. So sometimes he's at our place for a while, and then other times he's at another location doing the managing there. And so I guess he wrote to him, explained what happened, and they had a bit of back and forth. And then he said, do you think that's all we're going to hear about it? And the branch manager said, oh, no. But I don't know if they've heard more about it and they're just not passing it on to me because there's really nothing I can do about it now. So yeah. If that's the case, I appreciate it. They're just kind of taking the heat and there's no need for me to know what's going on. They'll have to send a replacement door. It'll take a little while. It was a big door and that was part of the problem.
Yeah.
I thought I could get it off the way it was loaded and I couldn't. As I learned, you know, I didn't do it like intentionally.
It wasn't intentional.
It was no, of course
you weren't
not.
Just for fun wrecking a door.
That's exactly right.
Okay, all right, because I was getting the story wrong. I assumed you were just going like, you know, fuck doors, like you hate them.
Yeah,
because they keep you out of places you want to go.
It's no fucks Friday. You know, it's a holiday weekend. Let's get out of here now.
That's right.
Quick as we can.
Yeah, no, it happened. You yelled no fucks Friday, and then like you took off your shirt and you ran around. Yeah.
So yeah, no, it's yeah. Anyway, it's all gone now. It's all water under the bridge. So these things happen. You know, there's a great line from Field Music, the band Field Music. There's a song that says, "Them that do nothing make no mistakes."
You know?
So that's life.
How do you learn without mistakes?
Well, that's exactly it. There was a guy that I used to work with. He's gone now, but he literally made no mistakes in his job. He literally never made a mistake.
Okay.
I mean, he made mistakes all the time. He's probably one of the most mistake-ridden people there.
Okay.
But none of his mistakes were his mistakes. They're always a fault to someone else.
All right.
And so if he made a mistake, someone else did it. For a while, he was even like wanting people to check his doors before he brought them downstairs because he was insisting that someone was going down and removing items from the loads that he was staging. Why would anyone waste their time with that? But anyway, because this is work for us. Like if you're going down there and taking stuff off, all it means is that when we go to load it and it's missing items, then we have to go back upstairs and grab them and bring them back down. Like, why would we even be bothered with that?
I remember once upon a time I was annoyed with like the politics at work. It was like, I think I was working on a TV show and, dealing with this executive producer and blah, blah, blah. And I went to, and I was buying shoes and I was buying shoes at Foot Locker. And someone was complaining about the manager and it was like, yeah, he's got me booked on, you know, this day. It's just, and the other person was like, it's all politics, man. It's all politics. And I was like, it's all politics. Foot Locker. Oh, yeah, I guess it is. And just like whatever job you're at, you know, it's all politics.
Yeah.
And so whatever little business, like, you're, you know, the Orange Julius stand, something's gone on there that people are like, it's all politics. It's who you know. It's all this. And, you know, because this is just how our brains organize things.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, they hate me here. No, they don't give a shit. Yeah, at all. But, you know, you're thinking that, oh, I did the worst thing possibly. No, they've got money set aside for, you know, things going wrong. And if they don't, they're a bad business because things are going to go wrong.
Yeah.
Things are going to break. Things are going to fall.
No, that's exactly right. I mean, you know, obviously I don't expect them to send them double doors just in case I mess up. So, but,
no.
You know, and it is like, you know, they have to produce a new door and send it to us. But
that's right. And then they call, they write that off on taxes because this is the kind of thing that businesses have because they do.
Yep.
And there you go. And, you didn't like try to hide it. You didn't try to give the customer the broken door and go, what? Well, it was fine when we had it. What are you talking about? You're the liar. Like, no, just open about it and it's fine.
Sure.
I'm sorry you felt like you had to write a letter of resignation. That's not fun.
No, it's just, you know, it's just me, much hand-wringing. It's just my way.
Were you burning a bunch of bridges in your letter?
My way.
And another thing, stupid.
That's right. Before I go.
Yeah. I want to mention, I've got a Tintin podcast.
A few thoughts.
Yeah, so that's going too. You want any good facts about Hergé, they're walking out the door as well.
That's right. All my Beatles knowledge for trivia, out.
Yep, gone. Hey, what? How you want to talk about like the big store or whatever, the Marx Brothers movie? Well, good luck finding someone who's
Good luck finding people like the Marx Brothers who want to talk about it.
Yeah, yeah. I was trying to think like what's the most obscure ones, and maybe that's one of the most obscure.
Yep.
Not sure.
Yeah, Love Happy maybe.
Yeah, Love Happy's pretty. Yeah, no one talks about Love Happy.
No, it's a mere coda.
It happened. Everyone got paid. The checks cleared. You know, that was their broken door. You know?
And right.
There you go. It's fine.
Mm.
Sometimes people learn from things. Sometimes they don't. I was, when you were saying that there was a guy who never made any mistakes, I wanted to say like, oh, that guy sounds boring. And also never any growth, I'm sure, for what they did.
Well, you know what? He was boring. He was a boring person.
Yeah.
He was. Like, he was... He was because he didn't make mistakes. his stories were never fun.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
would he say the clever thing in his stories? Like, would he, and then I said to him, blah, 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 or would he not even do that?
Well, I'll give you an example of one of his stories.
Yeah, so, how do you get a story when you've done nothing wrong?
So I can't go into all, like, the extraneous detail, which is also boring, but he can't resist, like, padding his story, because he's a liar as well.
Right.
So all his stories are full of unnecessary detail.
Lots and lots. Yeah, yeah. That is a good way of knowing something is a lie.
Oh, yeah.
Is like, okay, so I'm really backing up all the things, and here's my references. Like,
yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That sounds real. So in his story, he, you know, he'll tell the story like, so I was taking my driver's test.
Yeah.
And I was doing great. And I was going to pass it. But as I was driving along, there was this tree company on the side of the road working on, you know, and I said to the tester, should I go around? And he said, yeah. And so I said, okay. So I went around it. And I made sure there was no cars coming, and I went around it. And then he said, and then there's something that he did when he was doing this. I can't remember exactly what it was, but and the guy said, "Oh, you failed." That's the only reason he failed. It wasn't his fault. It was this instructor, the tester said it was okay, and I did it, and then he failed me.
Right.
You're like,
sounds so real. So you ran over someone on the way?
Sounds real.
Like, what happened? Something. There's another part of this story.
No.
What did? Okay, so
that's what I mean. All his stories are boring.
So. Why? Okay, so he drove around this thing.
Yeah. He was doing perfect on his exam.
Okay, so you fail perfect. Because of one thing.
He failed because of one thing.
So this was a huge thing.
I guess so.
It was a huge mistake.
Was
there any indication of why this was a huge mistake?
Remember, this is a lie.
I know, but was there? So, but there would have been, like, okay. To me, just as a person, a human being, mm-hmm. and I mean, and I'm not being rude, I'm being polite.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, you know, you don't just hear that and just go, what a world. You go... Well, what did they think was the error? Like, what was the mistake?
I can't remember
that?
What it was. Like,
sure,
I can't,
sure.
That part of the story. Yeah. Now. And you just listen to that, and you go, "What a boring story! Like, why would you even waste anyone's time with a story like that?"
Mm-hmm.
When I went to do my driver's test,
because it's a story that's in his head that he's had to play in his head to justify things to himself, because he got home that day and felt like shit because he didn't get his driver's license, right? And then he had to like play it in his head and go, wait, no, I wasn't in the wrong.
Yeah, yeah.
He, to the point where he probably believes it.
Yeah.
Like, that's the thing too. It's like, so no, he was in the wrong. He was in the wrong. Play it a couple more times.
Yeah.
And now that's the story.
Oh, well.
All right. Now I've justified it and I feel okay with my life.
I mean, this is a guy who was involved in a bank robbery, got shot in the heel.
So they were aiming low.
Literally.
Or was he doing that up on the counter? Point break thing where he's doing a little dance. Shot him in the foot.
He was...
In his prime minister's mask.
He was almost hit by a car, but he was able to jump over it before it hit him.
With his bad heel?
This is another time.
Okay.
Another time.
Well, okay, it's another time, but was it after his heel injury?
Yeah. His
I want to know chronologically how this happened, because if he was jumping over a car with a bad heel...
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because listen, I don't know how many years in advance you got shot in your heel, but if you're years later able to jump a car, like one of two things happened.
Sure.
One, you're lying, or two, heel healed in such a way that now you have a super heel.
Yeah.
You know, because of the bullet wound, it cut something.
It could be,
and now he can do super jumps.
We could be reversing the order of events as well.
So he jumped over the car.
Yeah.
And into a bank robbery.
Don't connect them. They're two different stories.
Two different stories.
Yeah, yeah.
My mistake.
Yeah.
Please continue.
And I was talking to someone at work about this, and I said, oh, man, I just realized why he's so boring.
Right.
Is that all the stories are about him either succeeding, or if something happens, it's someone else's fault.
Right.
You know? Like, it's just boring. I said, here's my driver's story. This is a true story. I'm not lying.
How you know it's the truth.
When I went to do, well, I just want to make a different, I want to clearly put myself between this other guy and myself.
Okay.
When I went to do my driver's test, I did a couple of practice sessions with a driving instructor. So I, you know, paid a guy, he came, he took, you know, we went driving for a couple of times. He gave me some tips where things I was missing, you know, like, you know, make, you know, look over your left shoulder before you turn into the left lane to make a left turn. Just things like little things like that you might, you might not do, think people might forget to tell you or you don't know. And
you're a human being.
I'm a human being. So
you
these are
not a robot.
And then he's giving me tips for things that I should do for the test as well. So one of us was like, you know, so the car that I had a handbrake between the seats. And he said, when you get to the testing clinic, make sure you set your handbrake. because they'll mark you down for not having your handbrake set when you get in the car. So I'm like, cool, good thing to know. So I get to the place. I'm testing in Lisa's car. She had a little Chevelle at this time.
All right.
Get in there, Chevette. I guess it was a Chevette. We get in, little hatchback kind of thing. Get in, get there, set the handbrake, go inside, meet the instructor, you know, do a little bit of this and that, go to the car. He's got his clipboard. He's like, okay, let's go. The car into reverse, start backing out. And the car's like, row, row, row. Like, it was working fine before we started, right? I'm like, row, I pull out. I'm like, I have no idea what's wrong with this car. I put it into forward. I start going again. This car's like jerking along. Whoa, whoa, whoa. We're all like, I said, I don't know what's wrong with the car. It was working fine before I got here. He looks down and says, well, you should take off the handbrake. Because really, I never drove.
Yeah.
I never set the handbrake. I never used it because it was an automatic car. You just put it in park. And, you know, like, you know, it's not like, you know, yeah, with my standard, I always set my...
That's a good story.
It's a good story because, you know, it has a funny little twist to it, this and that.
Yeah, and you set it up. You just give you a little bit of advice. The whole thing is like, and here's the good thing that makes it a good story. So I wanted to do a good job. Well, the guy told you to do a good job, make sure you mention, you know, the Korean War. Why? Because he was a hero of the Korean War. And he wants to, and he'll be happy and he'll give you a nice mark.
Sure.
So you started off. And in the middle of it, you just go, how about the Korean War? And he just starts screaming at me. And I didn't realize that I looked like his friend who died in the Korean War. And he started screaming and trying to get out of the car. Yeah. And then I crashed into a tree. Yeah, because like whatever the thing is that you was supposed to be this, it was the opposite. Yeah. That makes it a good story.
Yeah.
Everyone wraps it up.
Also,
And he went, Jimmy!
I don't look like a hero. I'm not trying to make myself look good. I'm saying this is something that happened to me. It's funny because it was kind of embarrassing, but that's life, you know?
Because your default, I think because your default position, when you finish telling that story, people don't look at you like loser. Whereas I think in the other person's head is like, I've got to build myself up so that I look better at the end of this story than I did at the beginning of the story. And the truth is, a person who tells a funny story looks better because, you know, oh, you're a guy we want to hear more stories from. It's nice to have you around. But they think, you know, if you put yourself down a notch, you're going to like end up like, oh, this guy. Go, you know, it's elementary school rules. It's like if you came to school and just went, do you want to hear the story about how I peed my pants at this Chuck E. Cheese? I was like, what? It's a pretty funny story. You're getting some laughs. But at the end of it, your pee-pee pants, you know, Peter, right? And you're going to be that for the rest of the year. Yeah, you've set yourself up for some problems because they don't get that. But as an adult, different situation.
Kids don't have much empathy.
No, you know, and you will get laughs telling the story on yourself, but you will not be able. Your default position at the end of that will not be a positive.
No, whereas when you're older and you've lived more life, people hear that story and they're like, oh, well, I've made similar mistakes or things like that have happened to me. I can empathize with what's happened, and also it's kind of a funny story.
Yep.
You know. Yeah, it's a human.
It's one of the first things you do in stand up. You either come out and you make some sort of you know, self-derogatory remark about, you know, that you think people might think about you. You deflate that. And then, you talk about something relatable. You got to start with, like, a relatable area and, like, get everyone on board of just, like, hey, so you see that weather outside? Anything. Like, just something that, like, everyone is aware of. And it's like, okay. And then... And you are, and then you can go in your weird directions from there. You're fine. But you need to have that kind of relatability, you know, off the get-go. And also, you know, the derogatory humor is kind of going away now a little bit, I think. People are trying to not do that as much. Come out, hey, I know I look like the love child of blah-ba-da-bah and blah-ba-da-bah. My father's Italian and my mother is Dutch, so of course I like to fuck turtles. I don't know, something that's in the middle, and you go and get it over with.
Yeah, it doesn't work for you.
It's a snoozy snore. It works, but it's a snoozy snore.
I was watching a little bit of Deadpool 2 the other day, and what's his name? Not J.T. Miller.
T.J. Miller.
T.J. Miller. It's funny because...
You were looking at the bizarro version of J.T. Miller.
J.T. Miller
plays... Whose career is better now than it used to
be. It is, because he plays for the Canucks. J.T. Miller. Literally, yeah. But T.J. Miller, yeah. There's like these little parts in the movie where I guess almost like it's a Judd Apatow light. And they just say to him, hey, just riff a little bit on how ugly Deadpool is.
Yeah.
And then he just kind of comes up with these horrible bad jokes.
Yeah, but one after the another. Camera's on him so that, you know, Ryan Reynolds doesn't have to be there for this.
And it's just like, you're like, oh, what a waste of a minute of a movie.
What like, it felt like to me, because he was in it so little.
The second one.
In the second one, yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. Like that was like, okay, so in his first contract, it said he would be in the second movie. That's what it read to me. Yeah, like, yeah. Like, okay, so he has to be in this movie. Mm. You know, he's got to have how much time? All right. Or this, how many lines? All right, let's burn through those lines. Go and do your thing. And yeah, so he does his thing. And every comedian's going to think, you know, they're funny, so they'll be fine with that. And there it goes. But what, you know, it stood out in the movie as like a, ugh. Yeah. Okay.
What a bore.
Yeah.
Looked like an avocado made love to a volcano or something. You're just like, oh,
yeah.
Why?
What do you mean? Because of his cancer?
Because
of his terminal cancer? Yeah. Is that what you're saying? Yeah. Jesus Christ, man. I mean, you're a devastatingly handsome man yourself.
That's right.
So yes. That's...
Yes. Since you're part Muppet, you...
Yeah.
Yeah. It's... yeah.
The next one looks good, though. Looks fun.
I know. I pranked Lisa the other day. I said, looks like they're not doing Deadpool 3. She goes, really? I said, no, they're doing Deadpool and Wolverine. I laughed until she hit me with a plate.
And then back to another letter of apology.
Resignation.
Yeah, resignation letter of resignation from the marriage. Why is this because of a door you broke? I mean, I adore you, and I broke...
Ooh, it's not that I have a
trust.
It's not that I have a stock resignation letter that I just fill in parts. I would like to apologize for...
Yeah, you'll be writing it by the end of this episode, too. I'm really sorry for what I said to Edward Dragansky about not pronouncing his name correctly.
Dear Edward, I'm resigning for Sneaky Dragon for...
the various reasons. I also am enjoying an Ed Dragansky right now, which is, of course, an ice-cold water in a Dr. Pepper mug.
There you go.
Yeah, but not the actual drink. They don't get dime one. Because you're still on the Lent, so
unless you buy Pepsi, water. And then you're giving money to Dr. Pepper.
Mm. Well, I'm drinking water as well.
That's fine.
I'm drinking British Columbia tap water. We're in a rainforest. I'm drinking the rain.
I know we had a party last night for me.
Yeah,
it's all about me. And we had pizza.
Nice
pizza.
What was on it? What are your toppings?
Well, we had quite a few people there, so I got a number. I think I got five pizzas.
Wow, that's
but
nice.
I forgot to get. Hawaiian, like a ding dong.
Oh, nuts.
I know, and I really like Hawaiian.
That's what I made last night. I made a Hawaiian pizza.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
So yeah, I got pepperoni, supreme, Canadian, barbecue chicken, and I think I got another pepperoni, but like a deep dish pepperoni kind of one. Okay. I got it from Little Caesars.
Sure.
Because I love Little Caesars, so I got stuffed crust.
We lost our Little Caesars recently.
It's I know.
Sad times.
I know, because that was something that David and I would go over to David's and we would go for get pizza and watch movies. Now we have to drive all the way to Fraser, which is like a 20-minute drive back and forth.
Oh, I used to live near that one. I know exactly what you're talking about.
So yeah, it's sucks. Anyway.
So you had five pizzas.
We had pizzas, but also we had like all these pops. We had like... Pop Shop Lime Pop.
Oh, no.
Which I love.
Delicious.
And then the beautiful red cream soda from the Pop Shop.
Yeah.
And I was just like, I can't have any of this. And I was kind of like, I was thinking
to myself. The next day you get up, you've been to the bathroom, you go, what the hell happened? I'm like, oh, my God. No, wait a second. Pop Shop Pop. It's all fine.
Is that right? Really?
Cancel the ambulance.
Does it really?
I don't know. It feels like it has a dye that would go through you and maybe. Would alarm you if you saw the results.
Yeah. It's interesting, actually. You're right, because real, like regular cream soda is just like...
Clear.
But at some point, someone said, you know what? This needs to be red.
Yeah.
So they made it red. It's kind of like cheese that we have here, right? Where we dye it orange, which is weird.
Oh, yeah.
Which is weird. Like cheddar cheese, we dye orange.
Yep.
Like why?
Like distinct.
At what point did we decide that cheese should be orange and we dyed it orange?
Well, I can give you my guess.
Okay.
So you're a cheesemonger, right?
You're a cheesemonger? So you're selling cheese?
No, okay. You're just monging it.
Yeah, yeah. But this is a North American thing.
Okay.
Okay.
But you're so you've got your display of cheese at the supermarket.
Sure.
All right. And it all looks exactly alike. Why the fuck would you buy different types of cheese? You wouldn't.
Yeah.
You need it to look at least like, okay. Oh, it's a little bit different.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
If all of your even if your Kraft slices all look exactly the same, why would you buy a different cheese?
Yeah.
You wouldn't. So you need to the illusion of variety.
Sure, that makes sense.
Yeah,
I'll accept that. It was just and then we had M&M's,
which you couldn't have.
I can have the cake. So you could have the payday on it.
You could just have the pizza.
Yep.
Would you have been able to have the pineapple? That's not too sweet.
That's fine.
That's okay.
It's fine.
All right. So you could have had the pineapple.
It's processed sugars that I'm
okay
fasting from, not naturally occurring sugars in fruit.
Okay. Here's the thing about the pineapple, though.
Okay.
No, you're right, because they would use fresh pineapple. They wouldn't use canned. But I was thinking, like, canned would be, like, in a sugared syrup.
Oh, okay.
That it's soaking in that, and then, you know. But no, they probably fresh.
Yeah.
Fresh cut.
I don't think they, I don't think they use canned.
No, that wouldn't make sense. No. Dumb. That'd be a dumb move on their part. But I'm sorry you couldn't have the treats. Sometimes you can, right? Sometimes your birthday falls at the right time.
Very rarely, but it has. But yeah, it's very rare that my birthday falls at the right time. It's strangely early this year, Lent, and Easter. Easter is in March, March 31st this year.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty rare that Easter isn't in April.
Well, let me ask you this question. Mm. When was your first sugar-free Lent? When did you start this tradition? Because it's been going on for a while.
It has.
You can listen to Dave be grouchy in a lot of past episodes.
Yeah, I wonder if we listened, probably if we listened to Sneaky Dragon, we would come upon the first year I did it.
And what inspired you to make that choice? First of all, two questions then.
Yeah.
What inspired you to make that choice, and what did you give up before then, if anything?
I didn't give up anything before.
So this was your first, the only thing you've given up for Lent in your life is sugar. It's traditionally sugar.
And the reason that I started doing it was because it just felt weird, like doing Pancake Tuesday, like Shrove Tuesday, and then you go to Ash Wednesday, and then I was just like eating normally again. Like I was giving up nothing. Like there's no... And this thing felt kind of strange. Like, I just felt like, what is the point of this season if I'm not
right,
like, doing something that makes something significant? And so I don't smoke. I don't drink coffee. I don't eat much junk food. I eat junk, but I don't eat oat much. Like, I only eat like McDonald's and stuff. I don't really eat that very much. I don't drink alcohol, you know? So there's very little in the way of like, sin, I'm putting this in quotes, sin food or whatever, like things right. that you know, are bad in quotations mark for you. And so, and I really love...
And you don't really believe in sin food.
Yeah, I don't really believe in it anyway. But I love sweets. Like I love candy. I love candy. I love candy more than chocolate. Like I love like gummy bears and, you know, Sour Patch Kids. And I do love candy, but you know, I love Slurpees. I love Pops. Like I just have a real sweet tooth.
Mm-hmm.
And... it is a real hardship for me. Not the worst hardship in the world, obviously, but it's a hardship for me to give up, you know, sweets for this time.
Where is Lent. Where are the temptations the hardest? Do you have anything at work?
At work, when people bring donuts for us at work, and it seems to be this is the time of year for us to get donuts. In fact, my first day of Lent was we had donuts. Someone dropped off donuts for that day, and so someone put it right in front of my chair. Where I sit for lunch, and then someone later on put it on my chair. So obviously they're having fun, you know, bugging me about it. But yeah, like that, you know, so that's a problem for me. And then going to restaurants, you know, I love to have like a Coke with my meal.
Right.
So that's out the window.
So when we're
and I don't have ketchup as well when I during
yeah, lunch. I wanted to ask about that. So what? Because that's processed.
It's processed sugar. It's okay. A real sugar bomb. All yeah, right. yeah, yeah. So I don't have jam. Don't have ketchup.
How about mustard?
Mustard doesn't have any ketchup in, or any
sugar in it.
Has no calories.
Okay.
If a food item is 5 calories or less, they can rate it as 0 calories.
Okay. So no relish.
No relish.
So you don't eat hot dogs during this time.
Sure. I just have it with
just mustard.
Mustard
that's
and
it.
Mayo. Yeah.
Okay.
But just
the mayo that doesn't have sugar in it.
Yeah.
Okay. That's an interesting thing with, because I like two different types of mayo. I like Duke's mayo and I like Kewpie mayo. And Kewpie mayo has extra egg yolk in it, but it's also sweeter. It's got some sugar in it.
Okay.
And then Duke's mayo has no sugar at all.
Mm.
And I like both of them. But yeah, definitely the Duke's would be the one for you right now.
I don't make a, like, a, don't try, I don't like to get too crazy about it because I think that's also like, not really following like the spirit of it, which is, you know, like,
right.
You're not
at the restaurant asking the waiter. Yeah. So what's in all the sauce?
Yeah. Yeah. Like I'm not,
you're not that guy.
Yeah. This is like get too legalistic, which is my absolute my yeah. complete opposite of what I love
you
about
it. You order a burger today and there's yeah. relish on it. You're not going to be, could you hold the relish? Could you yeah. just give me a nice dry burger?
I hate the idea of what I like to call a ladder religion, which is the idea that you have to climb some sort of ladder to God.
By, oh, I thought you meant the Church of Latter-day Saints.
Yeah, them too. I just the whole idea of like having to like follow special rules that make put you in, you know, God's grace because you are following all these special little rules that have been. I'm wearing a hat with a feather in it on Tuesdays, and on Thursdays I always wear my purple pants because that's what God wants us to wear, purple pants on Thursdays, mm-hmm. and but you know all these sort of idiotic rules that have been put in place over time by people.
As a kid, I always
to thought, control us. Obviously.
Yeah, as a kid, I used to think that the Latter-day Saints involved ladders. I thought there was ladders for some reason, and like there was a little bit of me that was just like, oh, they must take place on the roof.
Yeah,
they use ladders.
That's Seventh Day Adventist you're thinking of.
And the other thing I thought was like, and this honestly, I didn't think this for too long because even as a kid, I'm not yeah. an idiot. But I thought like, oh, because they've got a ladder to heaven.
Yeah.
Oh, and like okay. they got their special ladder. And
Jacob's
so when
ladder.
You, yeah, when you die, you get your ladder because
sure.
you're a Latter-day Saint. And you get to climb the ladder to heaven. And then when you're up there in heaven, you pull the ladder up behind you.
Yeah.
You know, but the Latter-day Saints had, I think we've talked about this before, a series of good ads that were, you know, I'm sad, Dad. Oh, let's talk about it. Hey, Latter-day Saints, talk with your kid. You know, make for a happy family. Don't be a yeah. jackass.
I mean, that's nice. It's just weird. Like, we were talking about that foot washing video
yep.
last week, I think. And, you know, when I was looking for the video for it, I was reading about it. And it turns out it was, like, funded by the Hobby Lobby and the Hobby Lobby. That.
Yep.
Which is, like, these very evangelical, yep. almost, like, right-wing evangelical, anti-gay, blah, blah,
not
blah.
Not like, but yes, and, actively, yeah.
And you're thinking, like, wow, it's so weird that their commercial seems to like it. The message is opposite of what they put a lot of money into.
Yeah.
You know, like they're paying $7 million to show LGBTQ people and I guess, you know, whatever you want to call it, heterosexual people, you know, like the straight person washing the foot of the gay person, the people at an abortion clinic, the person protesting washing the person at the foot of the woman going to the clinic. Like, they're, you know, purposely putting these things that are very, that, you know, would think would be the exact opposite of what Hobby Lobby or whatever these sort of right-wing evangelical.
Yeah. Though, things. Okay.
So it's kind of odd to me.
Yeah. I will finish my though
yeah,
afterwards.
Sure.
Oh, now.
Yeah, go ahead.
Though, you know, I don't think in the Bible, you know, that prostitution is, you know, something, hey, that's great. But like Jesus is washing the feet of someone who is a prostitute, or you know, I don't know how you interpret that. But it's not endorsing being a prostitute. It's going like, no, I'm washing the foot of even a.
Yeah.
So if you're at the abortion clinic, that we're washing the feet of even a person who is like at this women's health clinic. Now, I'm not saying the women's health clinic is a good thing. We're just saying like they're a sinner. We're washing the feet of sinners.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a little that it's like what they are doing is a sin, but we're good because we're washing the feet of the sinners, but we're not saying it's not a sin. So let's make that part clear.
Well, that's a possibility. That's also a repugnant idea that you should hate the sin and not the sinner when the sin is the person, you know. But it's not, yeah. I mean, there's lots of different scenes or scenarios that are presented yeah. in the commercial.
Yeah, it's pricey. It's like there's a lot of actors.
They almost look like paintings the way they're presented, but I suppose they are just like treated.
Yeah, images. There was a bit of me for a bit when I was like looking at it, I was like, is this AI? Did they just like do a CGI generated thing here, cuz this looks
heavily photoshopped, like heavily, a lot of effects added with the kind of like,
maybe, yeah,
like, you know, like,
I guess I know like how much you get paid for being in a Super Bowl ad and it's substantial, and they, you know, it's like, oh, there's a lot of cash being spent just on this ad itself. Okay. All right. Fair enough. You got the dough.
Yeah.
Enjoy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jesus. He gets us. Jesus. He's down. He's down with it.
It's you know, yes, there's Jesus reflects every age, of course, so we always modify how we think about Jesus to suit ourselves. But it's interesting when it kind of crosses in a way. who knows? Hopefully it sparks discussion. That's not just people angry about the fact that there's a commercial.
Are people angry about it?
There's people who are angry on both sides. There's people who are angry that they spent $7 million on a commercial when they could use $7 million for other things, which is a point, but that's not how the world works.
Nope.
So, you know.
Never has been.
And then there's people on the right who are angry about the way the scenarios are presented, that, you know, there shouldn't be, you know, if they're, you shouldn't be washing the foot of a murderess at an abortion clinic. You shouldn't be washing the feet of a LGBTQ person.
The Bible seems to disagree, I think, you know. Like, wash the feet of the sinners, wash the feet. Yeah.
I mean, in the
unless, again, it's not, you've studied the Bible more than I have, so you tell me, like, what is the what in the story of the washing the feet of, it was Mary Magdalene, right?
No.
Oh, right. Whose feet does Jesus wash?
He washes the disciples' feet.
Disciples' feet, but yeah. no one's washing the feet of a prostitute?
No, you think no. There's no Mary Magdalene wasn't a prostitute, but anyway, that's kind of a later bit of fan fiction.
Okay,
but
how did that come about?
The prostitute part?
Yeah,
I don't really know how Mary Magdalene changed. Maybe, you know, it could. I mean, I wouldn't put it past patriarchs. Mm-hmm. Patriarchy that wanted to downplay the role of women in the story, because all women had a very important part in the Bible. I mean, it's Mary Magdalene who discovers, like, it's in the Mark, I'm pretty sure it's Mary and another woman who come to the garden and find the tomb open and hear the messenger tell them that Christ is gone.
Okay.
And so there may have been an attempt to discredit or downplay her as a person and make her into something that she wasn't.
Yeah, just mentioning here that, like, she's been portrayed for more than 2,000 years as a prostitute and adulteress, an object of veneration, and even as Christ's wife. But, you know, her most enduring detail is she represents sin, yet there's no reference to her being a prostitute or sinner in any of the New Testament Gospels.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
In the story... Christ washes the feet of the disciples at the final the Last Supper, and it's Peter who tries to refuse to have his feet washed by Christ.
Okay,
and
because he's ticklish.
So one reading of that is that he refuses to let Christ wash his feet because there's a lot of different readings. One is he venerates Christ so much that he doesn't want him to lower himself to washing Peter's feet.
Okay.
And, you know, or we could take it that he doesn't want Peter to wash his feet, or Christ to wash Peter. Peter doesn't want that to happen because the Messiah, the person who is going to be the savior of Israel, should not be washing the feet of people who are low-born people like him. You know, he is above that, that he should not be abasing himself by washing his feet. Christ's whole purpose of this foot washing is to show that, yes, he is this person of authority, of, you know, but he is not better than them. They're not lesser than him. That we are here to serve each other. And so, you know, that's the story.
So it is not in any way washing the feet of sin.
No, not necessarily. Unless, I mean, yes, all humans are sinners.
Right.
I mean, we all do sinful things in our lives. That's just a fact of existence. And so Christ Christ's grace is available to everyone.
Okay. You know?
And I agree with the Bishop Laud, who made that point to the Puritans who disagreed with him, they were also a latter religion, the Puritans, that you had to do certain things in order to gain God's grace and mercy. Whereas Bishop Laud felt that Christ, you know, God's grace was available to all through Jesus Christ. And he killed people to make that point and also torture them. That's what you got to love about the Middle Ages. They really knew how to have a good time.
Yeah. It was like, that to me is always like, how do you get this from that? how do you get the torture out of this? How do you figure this one out?
Such a strangely brutal time.
Such a reach. Yeah.
Such a strangely brutal time that you could have this sort of cognitive dissonance of torture and murder in order to make your case for the love of God. Wait, just hold on.
I have a pilgrim.
Luckily, there were people who went, hold on.
Yeah, and then they were tortured. I got a question for you about the pilgrims.
Sure.
And their
progress?
I think no. Oh, ooh. Tell me if this is right, because it was always like confusing when you saw those buckle hats. Now, It's the reason for the buckle hat.
Okay.
So, because they're not going to make a bunch of hats different sizes. So, like, all the hats are the same size, but the buckle controls the size of the hat. So, like, you put your hat on.
I don't think so.
And then it's like a belt because it looks like it wraps around.
Yeah.
And then you can adjust it. So if you've got a big head, let it go. If you've got a small head, you can tighten the buckle and there you go. Because they're not going to like go, how big's your head? Okay, we're going to make you a special hat for that. Because we're not. We're pilgrims. We just got like, you know, we make all the hats the same. We're simple people. We're not going to mess around with that. And everyone's got different size heads. So buckle hat. Otherwise, my question to you then, David, is why the buckle hat?
Decorative?
But no one's ever done a buckle hat before. No one ever's done a buckle hat since.
Well, didn't they? They wore them in England. Like other people wore them. It wasn't just pilgrims that wore them. They were like a popular hat of the day. Yeah.
Okay. I can't remember ever seeing like an old timey, you know, English drama where people had got buckle hats. Like when you think buckle hat,
yeah.
Pilgrim, end of list.
That's the most common thing we see, but
yeah.
I'm quite certain that if we search for buckle hats, we would find more than just pilgrims wearing buckle hats of the day.
That's what you think.
Okay. that's what I think, yes.
Okay.
So I do think that, what are people who make hats called?
Oh, I know this. Why you begins with an F, maybe? Feels like it. Buckle hat. Haberdashers.
That's the person who sells scarves.
No, it isn't. A haberdasher. Isn't a haberdasher hat?
No.
Okay, fine. Buckle hat. All right. It's pretty sure.
Sells like the
linen. Well, now I got to look up haberdasher as well.
Okay. Hat maker was not a milliner.
Haberdasher. Oh, yeah. Buttons. Small. All right. Yeah.
Linens.
Men's clothing and accessories.
Sure. Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Let's go. Let's go buckle hats then. Buckle hat. Yeah, all right. So men's hats, buckle. No, that's not helping me at all. Images. First thing comes up. You got a pilgrim hat there. Well, it's not. A lot of pilgrim hats. But like I'm trying old timey. You got like, where the hell did buckle hats come from? This is where we should have done some research.
Maybe, beforehand. Yeah, let's not get too deep into it because it's a little dull. But let's let listeners answer this question. Is the buckle hat common outside of pilgrim wear? I mean, I know that we see it a lot being worn by pilgrims, but that's because pilgrims are a popular image at a certain time of year in the United States, which is a really large country that kind of like, you know, makes a big case about itself.
Okay, so the internet agrees with you, saying that style of hat was popular in the 16th and 17th centuries.
There you go.
Especially in England and Holland. The hat was called... it's like captain, but with an O in the middle. Capotain.
Okay.
And it was worn by people of all classes, so they were just Europeans. That's why they wore them.
Hmm.
Yeah. But the hat was popular with Puritans in England, and they wore their hat to distinguish themselves from other religious groups.
I see.
So there you go. All right. That's fair enough.
Yeah, so you would get it in a variety of sizes because it would be made by a Shapurist. And I have no idea what hat makers go.
What are hat... makers call. I know you've all looked this up.
I would have known that because, you know, because of the mercury poisoning.
Milliner.
A milliner. Oh, I said milliner and I thought it wasn't correct.
Or we would also have accepted.
Yep.
Hatter.
A hatter, yes. Yep. Because they would get mercury poisoning treat the fur on the hats with mercury.
Yep.
And so a lot of them would be shaky.
Yeah, they would turn into human thermometers.
He's called the Mad Hatter.
Yeah. Well, why was the March Hare called the March Hare?
I don't know.
I played the March Hare, and I don't know that either.
I could go and get my really boring book of the annotated Alice in Wonderland. It might tell us in there.
Okay.
But it's a bore. It's a snooze. You just want to read a book. You don't want to. Yeah. You want to read a book, a page, and then look down and read like footnotes, then turn the page and then read a little bit. There's a footnote. Look down. Read the footnote.
I think I also played the March Hare. It's kind of crazy as well, and didn't get any notes.
Did you get any notes?
No one gave me notes on like not to.
That's good.
So there you are.
Huh.
Why is
that? I mean, it's kind of a crazy scene, the whole tea party. It is is it called the Mad Tea Party?
Yes.
Or is that just the ride at Disneyland?
Oh. I think it is called a Mad Tea Party. Well, okay. It's not called. The idea behind the March hare comes from the hare behavior you're most likely to witness in the month of March.
Oh, I guess
this sort of behavior you might see includes madcap chases and furious boxing matches. This is not mad in quotes behavior, but instead the courting behavior of mating hares.
Sounds like it.
So that hare is horny. It was the Mad Hatter and the horny hare.
It all makes sense now.
Yeah. Ba-doing!
Ooh! Yeah. Sorry that your theory for the buckle got to...
Yeah.
It's proven.
It made sense. Like, it was like, oh, it would adjust. Like, why? Like, if you've got a buckle almost anywhere else, you got a buckle on your shoe, that's going to tighten your shoe.
Yeah.
You got a buckle on your belt, it's going to tighten your belt. You got a buckle on your hat.
Mirror.
It's fashion. It's for fashion. And it feels weird that the pilgrims who are so anti-fashion.
Yeah, it does. That's the part that seems odd, doesn't it? That
just a little glitter, a little bit. Just a touch.
Just enough so that everyone knew they were special.
Yeah.
We are special.
Hats we're going to go to the pilgrims.
We're going to go to another country and found a shining shining city on a hill.
Yep. And then one day people will go, we didn't land on Plymouth Rock. Plymouth Rock landed on us.
Do they say that?
Yeah, Malcolm X said that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
It's good. Good one.
Or at least Denzel Washington said it in Malcolm X,
the movie. As Malcolm X, yeah.
As Malcolm X.
Yeah. I've never seen that movie.
Oh, it's good. Mm. Yeah, it's good. It's long. At the time, I was like watching it. I watched it at the Cap Six. It was 3 hours and change, and it was the longest movie I think I'd seen in a theater. I was like, "Whoa!" Like when we cruised past the second hour, it was like, "Wow, this has got a lot long time to go." And it was like, I was like, "This is good value because it doesn't cost more than a regular movie." Mm-hmm. But also, this is a long time, and my butt hurts.
There's another Denzel Washington Spike Lee film. I can't remember what it's called now, but it also has. I was watching Clive Owen kind of go through his career. You know, they have those little videos where the actors will. And he was talking about that movie with Denzel Washington, directed by Spike Lee. Sorry, I can't remember the name of it. And Clive Owen's character in the film wears a mask through the movie. And he didn't want to do it because he didn't want to just have to wear a mask through a whole movie. And so he told Spike Lee no. But Spike Lee kept wanting him to do it. And so. He invited Clive Owen to a basketball game.
Inside man.
He invited Clive Owen to a basketball game. And so they went to this New York Knicks game. And he didn't realize that when Spike Lee goes to a basketball game, he's part of the game. So he's like, you know, yelling at the players, yelling at the refs, exhorting players, you know, and carrying on and stuff like that. Making a big, big thing about it. And then, but didn't say anything about the movie. And then they on the ride home, he just turned Clive Owen and said, "So you're doing the movie or what?" Clive Owen said, "Okay, I'll do the movie." But he wanted someone who had an authority in their acting, in their presence, in their voice to be that character.
Yeah.
To act against Denzel Washington. Because, you have to have two strong actors.
Oh, sure, sure.
Because Denzel Washington.
And Denzel Washington will choose some scenery up.
Yes, he will choose scenery. Yes. It's so funny that the one guy who came out of St. Elsewhere and like really went somewhere.
Mm-hmm. So you're not counting Ed Begley Jr., eh?
I mean, he had a little bit of a career, but nothing like Denzel Washington.
Oh, you're right. Working actor-wise, whoever the guy the second lead was, you know, he's in Everything in the World.
Like, oh, yes. Yeah, David Morse.
Yeah.
Often plays a villain, too, which is weird, because he was like the
gentlest
guy in the show.
Yep.
Until they kind of ruined his character by...
They did a lot of stuff happen to that guy. That was a rough time.
I know, it's so weird. It's
holy shit. It
turns out he got his license in Mexico and all this kind of garbage is going on.
Yeah.
You're not a doctor.
Now you're sexually assaulted. Okay, now turn your back for a second while your kid's kidnapped. Like, Jesus, leave the guy alone. Cut him some slack.
Yeah, I enjoyed like the first season of that season.
I guess Howie Mandel's got a pretty good career right now.
I guess he did pretty well out of it too, but not like an actor. He kind of became like a personality more than.
And the other guy who was the janitor is a very working director. He directed a bunch of episodes. I forget his name.
Okay,
but he's like did a whole bunch of stuff too. Yeah,
I'm looking. That's good.
But you're right. Obviously, Denzel Washington best.
Yeah,
yeah, career end.
And all I remember about his character is that he jogged.
Yeah.
That's all I remember.
I remember one where like he jogged so much he threw up.
Oh, really?
I was like, ooh, that's too much jogging. And he had to like prove to himself that he could do it. That was my favorite TV show before Simpsons came out.
Saint Elsewhere.
Yeah, because they showed it every day and I got really hooked on to it because it was like there was so much to it. And I was like, geez.
I watched it as it was happening. Mm. So it was a weekly show for me. But yes. It had a lot of good personalities and a lot of, and had a lot of good actors in it. William Daniels was in it.
Yeah, they do a lot of things like, well, let's do a flashback episode. We're going to see the origin of the hospital. Mm. And you're like, oh, that's really good. We're going to have one where Howie Mandel dies and goes to the afterlife and he's God.
That was silly.
Oh, I like that one a lot myself.
Oh, did you? Okay.
I thought it was one of my favorite portrayals of hell, which is a guy who was like constantly complaining about getting, you know, the bad end of the stick. And it's like, no, you're an evil sack of shit.
That was the rapist character.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's just in a boat. You know, he's looking up at the clouds and he's just like, I can hear them up there. And I'm just going to make it up there one day.
Actually, you're right. That
was
good.
And then, you know, he's laughing at Howie, like, who's in the water. It's like, better be careful, Howie. There's sharks. And it's like, I'm kidding. There's no sharks. And it's like, you know what, Howie? I was kidding about there being no sharks. And then sharks are coming, like, geez. I'm like, okay. And he lets him in the boat, but then he gets real mad at him again.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Pushes him out of the boat. And it's like, yeah, you're keeping yourself here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're the reason. Absolutely.
It's a good, it's a good kind of take off on C.S. Lewis's book, The Long Divorce.
Oh, tell me about it.
Oh, it's kind of similar. Like, so in his vision of hell is just like a city, like just a nondescript gray city where people live, but they're so wrapped up in all their grudges and problems and things they think are important.
Yeah.
You know, so in the story, it's like a novella. It's not a long story, but it's like a novella. In the story, you can go and catch a bus and you can go to heaven, but will you be bothered to do that when you have, you know, I've got this meeting I have to go to, we're debating the existence of God. I've got to go there and I don't want to miss the debate, you know, so I really have to, I would love to take this bus, but I, you know, I just have time right now. I'll get another day, you know, and just people like that, you know, or, you know, I don't want to go to where, you know, like it could be like a husband, you know, mad at his wife. She's in heaven. He's here. Well, I don't want to, you know, like, why am I here and she's there? Like, I should be there too. You know, I'm not going to get on a bus and just go there. I should be there right now. You know, like just these sort of things like that, where you're just closing yourself off. And that this is sort of an interesting vision of how hell would keep you there and stuff like that. And it's all voluntary. It's not, none of it.
Yeah. No, I like that a lot. I know there's always like a thing of just like, can kids go to hell? And whenever they have a thing where like there's kids in hell, it feels like, well, that's wrong. That's just a wrong thing. And my thing on that has always just been, no, the kids can be there. But they just give them all the power. So, like, you know how a kid is just, like, the cruelest thing in the world. It's just like, yeah, now we're going to give them all the power and they can do whatever they want, you know, with the other people that are around there. But not the other kids. They can't hurt the other kids. Mm. Kids can't be hurt. But they can hurt. And so it's like, yeah. Oof. No demon could be, like, crueler than a child.
Yeah, this is like a demon-free hell. There's no devil. There's nothing like that. It's just sort of a vision of a... of just our world, but just kind of more seedy and run down. And then when people go to heaven, when they get there at first, they can't even like stand on the grass. It feels like glass to them. It's so hard.
Yeah.
Because they've just come from this is actual reality, not our pretend reality. But you know, this is sort of, it's an interesting book.
There was I'm going to use the word interesting as well.
Oh,
the amount of times we say the word interesting, trademark. you should have a bowl of M&Ms and just eat one every time we say interesting. But I was talking
good word.
P and I usually have like a nighttime yap on our porch. And I was, complaining about the side effect things is what I'm doing now is I spend like about a half hour on the porch, you know, after I've taken the pills at night and we just talk. And she was going, you know, you might want to like think of it this way. Cause like those side effects are annoying, but you know, it's like that, that shampoo, that, Selsun Blue, where they had the, you know, I feel it tingling. And it's like, yeah, it means it's working.
Mm.
And it's like, okay, well, the side effects are like affecting me. It's like, yeah, it means they're working. So they're lowering your blood pressure. They're doing all this stuff. And it's annoying. And you can feel it. By the way, Selsun Blue added the tingling.
Oh, did they?
Yeah, it was nothing to do with like it working or not. It was just it gave you a sensation that made you go, oh, yeah, this must be good because I'm feeling tingling. No, it's because they put tingling things in.
It's like peppermint or something because that's what it feels like. That's been,
but in my mind, cool. In my mind, one of the things I've been thinking of for the last like two weeks or so has been that, okay, whenever you're healing, it doesn't feel good. Like if you put something on to heal, it's going to burn, it's going to itch, it's going to be annoying, it's going to, but it's doing the job of it's healing you. but it's not a pleasant thing to heal. Healing is painful.
Mm-hmm.
What's not painful is just like letting things go numb and get worse. And, yeah. you know, that's comforting and you get into this numbness. And it's like, yeah, but you're not healing. You're not getting any better.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but you are not feeling anything. So if that's what you want, that's that option. So, yeah. You know, when you kind of like go, all right, I'm annoyed by what's happening, but it means this is happening too. So, all right, I'll take it. I'll accept it. Here we go. Let's move forward with the healing. Yeah.
Well, good.
Also the case in therapy. We got to talk about this. I don't want to talk about that. Let's forget about that. Oh, all right. That'll be fine. Then you'll get way better if you just ignore it.
Yeah. I was reading an article about patients lying to therapists. So that was interesting. Not helpful for yourself, obviously, but these therapists they're talking to said it's quite common for patients to lie.
Yeah. You want to be liked.
You want to be liked, or you want the therapist to think that you're improving.
Yeah.
So you're like, oh, well, I don't do that anymore. Yeah. I've stopped biting my nails, or I've stopped worrying. I've stopped, you know... Stop writing resignation letters at 2 a.m.
Well, that's something I've told my therapist is because I used to live with someone who went to a therapist and they spent most of their time trying to charm their therapist.
Okay.
You know, and get them to, like them. And and I was like, yeah. And so they got nothing out of it because they're bullshitting.
Is this a performance? Time for more performance.
It was a bit of performance, yeah.
Yeah.
And so I said to them, I've got this performing side of me and also, you know, other things. So I'm going to not be charming here. I'm going to be bluntly not charming. I'm probably, you know, when I think of a joke, I'm not going to say the joke. Though, you know, I've got the joke in my head. I've got it loaded up. I'm like, I'm putting that joke aside. But yeah, definitely trying not to be charming. I'm trying to heal. That's what I'm trying to do here. Okay. And yeah, it's also people that go to the doctor and don't want to.
So you told your therapist that?
Yeah.
And what did they say?
Good. that's how you do it.
That's good.
That's how you do it. Yeah. No, my therapist gets what I'm trying to do and we're on the same page, but it just reminds me of people to go to the doctor and like, oh, you know, and you talk to someone when they've come from the doctor. Oh, did you tell them about your this? Like, nah, I didn't want to bring that up.
Yeah. That's strange, isn't it?
Yeah. But it's embarrassing.
I guess it is embarrassing.
It's weakness. It's something. It's like, you know, I already told them about my this and my that. I didn't want to bring up that. I was like, no, it's okay. That's what they're there for. That's their job. You know, and maybe at some point you've had a doctor go, oof, or react in a way that embarrassed you or humiliated you. And, you know, that's possible. Or maybe you haven't been listened to. You know, that's how I felt when I called the pharmacist. I was like, oh, I'm feeling this, this, and this. Yeah, it's probably not that. Okay. Well, it feels very dismissive. And there we go.
They didn't make a joke. Nor were they charming.
Nope. I've got charming jokes about every one of these things loaded up and ready to go. Yeah. No, it's just something I was very aware of. That was like, oh, this person is going to therapy, which is something at the time I thought maybe I should do that. And just hearing that they, you know, were kind of scoring points with their therapist. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, they're basically trying to seduce their therapist with, you know, their charm.
Yeah.
And yeah. It's like, this is not good. That's not a thing. You don't want to seduce your doctor. That's very bad.
But was that just part of their general life as well? Was to charm, seduce, sort of charm their way through life?
I think their feeling was that their suffering also was good for their art. Mm-hmm. And it was just part of who they were.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's the fear, I think, that, and I'm projecting here, it's the fear that if you don't have your pain, well, who the fuck are you?
Mm-hmm.
What are you without that? And, you know, there was a romanticism to, you know, kind of Tom Waitsy type boozy, you know, just things are bad and doing the blues and yeah. But what happens if you cure that? What if you're happy? What do you do then? Will all the funny go away? Will all the depth go away? Will you have a personality at all? You know, do you want to be one of these boring straight people who are just like you're blindly going through their lives? And you want to be that? It's like there's another option, you know?
I think if you have a sense of humor, then you would never lose that by healing yourself.
Yeah.
I think that'd be impossible.
But it's a real, it's so basic that it's almost like silly to mention it now, yeah. of the idea of like, once I get cured,
yeah.
will I be funny again?
Mm-hmm.
If I stop drinking, well, who am I?
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
how will I see my friends? I'm not going to see my friends because they drink.
Mm.
So who am I? Oh, and I'm fun when I drink and this, and I'm going to lose that. And what am I? And yeah, that's not the case. You're going to be you. You're going to be more you. This is getting in the way of you. This is numbing what you are. And I understand the reason, because you want to numb yourself because pain hurts.
Yeah.
So yeah, this is numbing. But you know, when you take that away, yeah, it's going to fucking sting. And then you're going to be more yourself. And that's a positive thing. But you got to convince yourself that it's a positive thing. It's tricky.
It's very hard to do.
But we encourage you out there to do it. We
yeah.
Yeah.
Make a point of it, please. I'm just going to find something that I saved.
Please do.
Yeah, the other day I was saying ADHD is not laziness. It is a depression response. It's yes. circled.
That is
then I was talking about procrastination. Now I'm a procrastinator of some measure.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was like, I was reading, I was like, oh, okay, I'm a procrastinator. Procrastination is an emotional regulation problem. Okay, that's interesting. Procrastination is about being more focused on the immediate urgency of managing negative moods than getting on with the task. Okay. And then it was like, what kind of procrastinator are you? And I had like a list on the bottom, like, oh, okay, let's see. Am I a dreamer? You know, verbal fluency, wordplay, communication, poetic expression, storytelling. Am I mixed? Critical thinking, problem solving, analytical reasoning, strategizing, mathematical, or a perfectionist? Nature connection, eco-understanding, nature observer, pattern identifier, gardening skills, or am I an overdoer? Spatial reasoning, concept visual, artistic creativity, photo memory, imaginative, or maybe I'm a worrier. Nature connection, eco-understanding, nature observer, pattern identification, gardening skills. The same, perfectionist and worrier are the same. But anyway.
Oh, you had to point that out. Huh?
Yeah.
That's interesting. That's the clue.
And so.
You feel like, you know, I will give this right back to you. But like, you know, you want to say, are you all of the above? And then Charlie Brown yells, that's it. And then the person spins backwards.
That's totally what did. I read them to Lisa and I went, I'm all of those things.
Yeah, that's it.
I'm all of those things. Yeah. This is it. Like she said, well, you know,
you need to run the Christmas play.
She said, you are an amazingly balanced person. She said, so I guess I am, but yeah, it's
play some Vince Guaraldi music as you go for a walk after that.
I am a perfectionist and a worrier and an overthinker.
It's funny. Someone sent me a ADHD test today as well.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. That's weird that you brought that up. It was because I've been reading Hannah Gadsby's book, and she was talking about getting diagnosed, you know, as being on the spectrum, and which was interesting because there's another interesting. she was
and also very anyway. Go on.
Yeah, she was originally diagnosed with borderline personality disorder, and before she was diagnosed with that, she was worried she was a sociopath. And then her doctor said the obvious thing, which is, you know, how worried are you about it? Oh, I worry about it every day. Well, then you're not a sociopath. Because yes. they would not worry about it. Once again, that's the trick. And it was like, you're a borderline, you know, a personality disorder. I'm like, oh, okay, that's interesting. And then later she was diagnosed as being on the spectrum.
Okay.
But for some reason that didn't appeal to her brain as much.
Okay.
So her brain wasn't interested in that.
Yeah.
And it was like, oh, that's something I never even think about. It's like when you get a diagnosis for something, you're more susceptible to attach to the interesting diagnoses
than
you are
to
maybe something that's a little bit, oh, yeah, you're obviously this. Yeah, no, that's boring. What I am? Oh, you're this. I'm like, oh, that's, yes, that's clearly me. Yes, indeed. But I wanted to look up like, oh, how do you get diagnosed with autism? And in Canada, well, first you take between $3,000 and $5,000. Like, okay, so the answer to that is you don't. Unless you're a kid.
Yeah, unless you're in school and you show enough signs of it that they're concerned for you. If you're mildly on the spectrum, you know, and most people are somewhere on a spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
If you are along a spectrum, then it's unlikely that you're going to get diagnosed. It's most likely that you will, you know, this is, a, you know, it's just not enough money to treat everyone. So the people who are most severe are the ones who are going to get the attention.
Yeah.
And the rest of us just have to kind of figure out how to make it work. What's good about that sort of diagnosis, though, I think, whether it's, you know, like when I took the gifted test when I was in junior high school and was tagged as a gifted learner, or when I realized, I wasn't diagnosed, but just reading about it, I realized that I have ADD. I'm not interested in it in the sense like, oh, that's, you know, that gives me an excuse. It's more, oh, that's a good explanatory thing.
Yeah.
Like I would have liked to have, like my mom was one they told that I was a gifted learner. She never told me that.
Yeah.
And I would have liked to have known that because it would have made sense of how I learn. Do you know what I mean? And yeah. Instead of feeling embarrassed about the way I learned, and that caused a lot of other problems, probably part of my procrastination comes from the fact that I'm a gifted learner and had trouble in school, not to learn, but had trouble in school with behavior and stuff like that because school was often boring to me because I was ahead of other students quite often and or would learn things quickly, but then would have to go through the, you know, extremely boring process of hearing about it again and again because school has to be
yep.
taught to the middle. And that's understandable, but it's also would be nice to know why you learn the way you do, you know, and that would have been nice to know when I was in grade. I think I got the test in grade 9.
When did you learn to read? What age?
Before school started.
Yeah. The first, sorry, I don't want to interrupt.
That's fine.
Your thing. I've heard about this now twice this week, and I'd never heard about it until like last week, which was hyperlexia.
Okay.
Have you heard of hyperlexia? It's kind of the opposite of dyslexia. It's okay. you're a very good reader.
Yeah.
And like you read at too early an age and you're obsessed with words and you're obsessed with numbers. And when I was a kid, I read when I was 4 and I used to watch Electric Company. I would write down every word that they would have on the thing.
Okay.
And I would just like fill a notebook every day. Not every day, but I'd fill a page every day. And I had to write down every word.
Mm.
And then I'd put them aside and, you know, I'd obsess over numbers. And it's one of the main signs of autism.
Okay.
It's like an early sign of autism. I was like, oh. And yet another a mutual friend of ours from high school had that as well. I brought that up and I was like, oh yeah, I just heard about that. And it's like, yeah. And that's how, you know, one of the reasons I found out that I was on the spectrum. Was like, oh, well, yeah, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah, look at the other stuff and go like, yeah, probably.
I didn't do that. I like to read.
Yeah.
And I wasn't getting read to at home as much as I guess I thought I should be. So I just taught myself to read so I could read books.
Would you go to the library as a kid?
Oh, yeah, quite a bit.
So your parents would take you to the library?
My mom would take us, yeah.
That's good.
The library, yeah, quite often. In those days, the library in Coquitlam was in the high school.
Oh.
So the high school was open at night as a library. I know, it's weird, right?
Yes.
It wasn't until I think I'd moved out of Coquitlam before. No, the library was built before that because there was a time, one time, I was probably in grade three or four, and my mom got mad at me at the mall, and she left me there. She drove off and left me, and I had to walk home.
So you got a job at Orange Julius.
A job at Shakey's Pizza. And Farrell's. Farrell's Ice Cream. That would have been a good place to work at. Anyway, so I was walking home, and of course, I was mad at my mom for doing this to me. And I was walking home, and it was quite a walk. It was like Lougheed Mall in Burnaby. It's Burnaby, but it's right on the border of Coquitlam and Burnaby. And so I was walking home and
How many miles would you say that is?
I'm not sure.
Okay. How old were you?
Grade 3 or 4.
Huh.
Probably grade 3.
Imagine your daughter's.
Oh, no. It's impossible. Grade 3. It's impossible
to imagine. And you leave them at the mall and they'll make their way home.
No. That's impossible to even imagine that. But for one thing, we lived in a different sort of situation. The girls, so it would have been an impossible walk for them.
Yeah.
But.
Non-abusive. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. You know what? I'm gonna figure out how far that is. I'm gonna open my maps. So anyway, I was walking home, and I was thinking to myself, I'm gonna go to the library, and I'm just gonna hide out there, and my mom and dad won't know where I am.
Yeah.
And then they'll be worried about me. But I guess my dad got home, and my mom told me what happened. He's like, "You did what?" And he got in the car, and he went and he picked me up as I was walking along the road. So that was at least that was nice. So if I was going from Lougheed Mall,
okay. While you figure that out, yep. I'm gonna say. It's weird to me when I was a kid, we go to the library, and libraries used to be brick, small buildings. And then at a certain point, when I became a teenager, It feels like all libraries just became large, cool buildings. Like people went, oh no, we got to have really good libraries. And I'm not sure if that was just in Canada or what happened, but it happened like all across Canada where it was like George Mackey Library was like a small little brick building.
Yeah.
You just go and like, oh, you got some books. I guess you got a couple of books. And then it became just this institution, you know, with like then meeting rooms and all this stuff. And it's like, where did Canada get all this library money from? Like, it just all happened at once. Same thing in Montreal. Little, tiny, you know, two-story brick library, and then, you know, gigantic, amazing library. And then the libraries have not had that kind of advancement since, except for the one downtown, which then became a Roman Colosseum. But back to you, Dave, and how far did you walk as a child?
I'm sorry, I'm trying to... I don't know how to do this.
That's all right.
I'm trying to figure it out. I'm just putting my address down.
Okay.
I can still remember my childhood address. Can you believe that, everyone?
I can remember my phone number from when I was a kid.
I can't remember my phone number now.
Yeah. By the way, if you want to call me as a kid, 671-4146.
So it's basically...
That, you get me in Greenfield Park, Quebec.
Just a little over 5 kilometers.
Okay. That's still substantial for like a third grader.
Yeah, it would be an hour and 12 minutes to walk it.
Oof.
So, yeah.
I just remember it from Men's Fitness and having to, like, do the 5K run.
Yeah, yeah. An hour and 12 minutes. Probably a little bit longer for a kid to do it as well.
Right.
But I was walking past the golf course. There used to be a golf course along the road by the mall. I doubt it's there now. It's probably all skyscrapers. But I was walking down there and plotting my revenge. And then my dad came and picked me up. And I was like, oh, why? I had this great revenge all figured out, but...
Yeah. It'd be fun if you, as a kid, wrote down all this stuff in a little book and just went like, okay, so when my parents are old, I'm going to do all the things back to them. And so it's like, hey, Mom, we're going to the mall. Oh, let's go to the mall. And then you just leave her at the mall and just go, oh, what's happening? And you just check it off the list as you go along. And then, you know, your mom wins some sort of like award or something and you know, you never tell her. You're like, oh, yeah. Oh, I didn't mention that? That you won the thing? Oh, yeah. That's too bad. You didn't let me know I was a gifted learner. Anyway, I guess this is important information.
There's something I learned when I was a kid, which is two wrongs don't make a right.
No.
Which my parents taught me, so maybe this is why they were
four wrongs make a right. Four wrongs. Right? Isn't that right? So right turn. Yeah, now you're fine. Yeah. That's how many turns it takes. You just got to keep making the turns.
Yeah.
Can't stop it at two. That's your flaw. Just keep going.
Two wrongs don't make it right. Yeah.
Anyone knows why libraries got good all of a sudden in the 80s? Let me know. I'm very curious about that.
Yeah, it must have been a bit of
money. They were all little brick buildings with limited supplies, at least in Canada, in the suburbs.
Yeah.
And then...
we're just really talking about BC. We don't know if this is the...
No, the same in Montreal as well.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and Burlington, Ontario as well. I remember we had a little tiny library in Burlington, and then 79, 80, it became a giant freaking library. Huh. Same thing in Greenfield Park, Quebec. Yeah. Well, what's up? What's up with that? Why all the library money? Yeah. Like, I know in Vancouver, we had the Vancouver Public Library.
Sure.
And so that was already, like, cooking, and it was all fine. But, yeah, suburbs. What's up?
I love that old Vancouver Library building.
Yeah. Right next to swimming pools?
No, it was on the corner of Burrard and Robson.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm talking about the George Mackey Library.
Mackey Library, yes. I love that library, too. Yeah. That's where I first discovered Tintin.
Oh, is it?
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have it at the school library?
No, we only had Asterix at Burnsview.
Okay, yeah, we had Asterix and we had Tintin. Mm. They only had Asterix. That's interesting.
I know, isn't it?
Because it feels like more intellectual to have Tintin.
Yeah, I guess.
Huh.
There's a lot more Latin jokes in Asterix.
I wonder...
Elia Jacta Est, am I right, everyone?
Yeah, this is a question we should have answered in our Totally Tintin podcast. But why those two... as the only kind of comic-y, booky things that would like be in every library in Canada.
Well, I think that's partly why they were successful here. Like Lucky Luke was published here in English.
Yeah.
There's a lot of Lucky Luke books.
But were they around when you were a kid? Because I don't remember around, that at all.
And I mean, I had a friend who had a bunch of them, but I never saw them when I was growing up.
Yeah.
It wasn't until I was like, when I met him, I was like 19, 20. And so... I was like, oh, that's too bad I missed out on those. But we just never were at the library. It was only Tintin. George Mackey Library only had Tintin. They didn't have Asterix there. the Burnsview Library only had asterisks. And that's how I read those. And it wasn't until I was older and was going down like to the comic shop that I found books like Valerian at the comic shop. They had, because Dargaud, Dargaud published some of those here, like published about four books here in English. So I had those. And, but that was about it that I ever saw. Like, I really never saw Lucky Luke, except that my friend had some that obviously had been published when he was growing up. And so, yeah, it's all like, how come, like, why didn't like Spirou and Fantasio make it over here? Or Gaston Lagaffe, why weren't those published here? Or if they were, they weren't popular. And maybe what made Asterix and Tintin take off was that the library system picked them up as something to carry, and they didn't bother with Lucky Luke. Maybe Lucky Luke having guns and stuff in it wasn't thought of as good library material.
Oh, maybe.
And so those just never translated into you know, kind of North American culture, or at least Canadian culture anyway. And I'm sure if you grew up in Quebec, you'd have a totally different experience with things, that you grew up reading these in French.
Yeah.
You know Spirou and Fantasio. You read like the later versions of them with different artists than Franquin. You read Lucky Luke. You read the Blue Tunics or whatever, you know.
I was just looking at when the Encyclopedia of Comic Book Heroes came out, the Michael Fleischer ones.
Okay.
Yeah, those, man, when was that? Come on. And so, did the, 76.
Okay.
76, they had one for Wonder Woman as well. They had one for Superman.
Okay.
And it was all the obscure characters were in it, all done inside.
Like inside the encyclopedia.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. That was all done by Michael Fleischer. Huh. That was in every library as well, so I read those to death. Oh, I don't remember those at all. And it was like, oh, who's Batmite? Who's Bat? Wait, Batgirl was a different Batgirl. What's all this about? Yeah, it was bizarre. It was like they had that one, and they had Jules Pfeiffer's something about comics as well. There's like a history of
the
comics.
The guy I remember was Maurice Horne.
Okay.
Or Morris Horne, who wrote like the Encyclopedia of Comics.
Sure.
And that was more, there was newspaper comics, European comics, and then American.
Yeah. And there was Mort Walker did a backstage at the comic strips, which was kind of a wink wink. felt a bit naughty. Tell all about comic strips.
Sure.
And in there, he'd have some booby pictures of Miss Buxley that he would send out to fans and men in uniform who wanted to see Miss Buxley. He would do that.
Didn't have an imagination.
And then I remember, like, I'm trying to see when this came out. Yeah. Oh, yeah, there it is. Yeah, that makes sense. If you were really lucky, this was gold, which was the Origins of Marvel Comics.
Okay.
And that was, you know, Stan Lee talking about inventing all these characters, maybe not talking about Kirby enough. and then they had Son of Origins. We had Here
Kirby,
Come...
Kirby, your enthusiasm.
Yeah, there was the Women of Marvel. Bring on the Bad Guys. That was a really good one. And, oh, man, so good. Those were so good.
Interesting. Yeah. As you know, as a kid, I was not a superhero guy, so I didn't... I would have sort of looked right past them, to be honest with you.
The only thing that I used to think back then was, it's too bad art was so awful in the 60s. Like, I would look at like Jack Kirby's Fantastic Four and see the drawings.
Yeah, yeah.
Compared to modern, like George Perez with George Sinnott.
Yeah.
Joe Sinnott.
Yeah.
Inking. And it's like, oh, it's so crisp and beautiful. And all the, there's a background on every page. And, you know, back in the oldie days, Kirby kind of, you know, there's a lot of, we don't need a background here. And yeah, this is going to be a character floating in the void. And
yeah,
there's a lot of cheats. And yeah, I mean, I was like looking at the very first issue of X-Men, and Professor X is sitting in a chair that radically changes from panel to panel. The room he's in, completely different.
Yeah.
He's like sitting in front of a window. That window's gone. Somehow Iceman slides down a pole from above him, even though there's nothing that's above him. It's a ceiling. It's just like, you don't give a damn.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
you look at the cover, and the cover, again, if you just take half a beat, you just go, what's this? Like, it's like Iceman is like 3 feet away from Magneto and missing him with a snowball. It's like, because he's got no eyes. It's like, you're terrible.
Well, let's face it. Kirby had a lot on his plate.
Yeah, he did. I mean, I like it now. Looking back on it now, I look at the first 50 issues of Fantastic Four and go, holy cow, that's a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Boy, the amount that you're just like pouring into that, it's incredible. But as a kid, when I was used to the slick,
yeah,
slick, tight drawings, it's like, what's this? It's just bullshit.
I can understand that. I mean, we were talking about Herb Trimpe quite a while ago, and we're bringing him back up again. But just an example of someone who drew in a, you know, basic old style Marvel way, yeah, that when you read him in the '80s, you're like, oh, what is this stuff? This blah.
Yeah.
You appreciate it more now, where you look at it now and you go, oh, it's really kind of nicely designed.
Can we have some Kirby? We've got Kirby at home. Okay, let's see. We got Trimpe at home. This isn't Kirby. No, it's as good as Kirby. Is it? Enjoy your glob story. Who's the glob? What's that about? I want Man Thing. We got Man Thing at home. We've got glob at home. Glob isn't the same at all. Mine's pretty, it's okay.
I think I reacted most strongly with Kirby to his 70s stuff. That was the stuff I really liked, like the Mr. Miracle story, stuff like that. And maybe that's just because they were readily available when we were teenagers. Like, they're always in like the nickel bin and stuff like that. Sure. You just find it, the demon.
The Eternals was like crazy.
Eternals, the Commandy, Devil Dinosaur, obviously Mr. Miracle.
Black Panther.
All the, I don't remember him doing Black Panther.
Oh, yeah. Hmm.
Those may have been a bit more collectible because they're Marvel. I think it was the DC stuff that really kind of, people didn't care about, and that just seemed to fill every kind of old fashioned comic book store. Just had like a bunch of bins on the floor that were just full of kind of 70s Kirby stuff or Kirby stuff that no one wanted, and I did, and I still have it.
Oh, good on you! I'll show you like my favorite cover of
my complete run of Mr. Miracle.
Do you have a complete run of Mr. Miracle?
Of the Kirby ones, yeah.
Oh, what's this is that's my favorite Black Panther cover.
Oh yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah. And then it's got the Black Musketeers are there as well. You're not going to see those guys in the movies.
Not with that name.
Nope.
Can they just be the Four Musketeers? No. Those guys are white. Okay.
Yeah. And there was something about like a frog. There was this like statue of a frog that had all this incredible amounts of power. Yeah, it was pretty. It was pretty great. Ah, nice. Then of course is Fightin' Claw, the villain without a claw. No, can't even get into that again. That's too deep a hole to go down. All right, there we go.
Makes you so mad.
It makes you so mad. You know what doesn't make me mad? And we can go back to talking as well. But I was going to go to letters if that's
well,
okay.
Well, I've got something that we have to talk about before that.
Oh, please do. If we have to talk about it, we have to talk about
it. We have to talk about this. So let me just, right. I just got to find it. Okay, so this was sent to us. This was sent to us by a listener by the name of Mary Hook.
Oh, hi, Mary.
Mary, who visited us here in Vancouver.
Yes.
Very early on in the show. This was very, it's an interesting, I guess she wanted to go to Vancouver. We were a good excuse.
Yeah, and hopefully. We all had some nice hot wings.
We did. We had some hot wings. We made her have a Slurpee.
She couldn't tell the difference between the American Slurpee and the Canadian Slurpee. And we went, what? How?
Which tells me she wasn't really a Slurpee drinker. And then we went to the Prop House as well and watched some comedy.
Oh, nice.
It was fun. She sent this. She said, we have to talk about it on the show.
Oh, all right. Hit me.
So this is from Reddit. Called Reddit Confessions.
Okay.
Headline, my coworker is a fucking weirdo.
Oh, okay.
Let me explain. I normally eat lunch at my desk. Let's say that I decide to eat sushi that day.
Mm.
Now, he is always on the phone, casually talking to work friends. If he sees me walk by with sushi, then he will proceed to say something like this over the phone. What do you think of Japanese food? I think sushi is overrated. Another example, recently I got a haircut, and while he is on the phone, he sees me, and a few minutes later, he literally says, sorry to change the subject, but am I crazy? Or is February a weird time to get a haircut? Because everyone gets one before Christmas, right? First of all, is this motherfucker even on the phone? Second, even if he were on the phone, can he just fuck off? Or let's say I'm on the phone with an agent from overseas, say Jabal Ali, for a reason that he can't wait due to time difference. Do you know what this fucker does? He'll maybe be occupied for an hour or two, but when he gets a chance, he calls up one of his buddies, and the first thing he says is, am I crazy? Or is it worth talking to Jabal Ali, agent over the phone? I don't get why people do that. Just mark the email as urgent. I just ignore him. He doesn't have the balls to say anything to my face. Fucking bitch. There you go. Now,
it's all politics, by the way.
It's all politics.
It's petty politics. Everywhere you go.
Yeah.
If there's two people who are working a lemonade stand,
yes,
there's some politics there.
Sure.
It's like, why do you get to squeeze the lemons?
What if they're working
why do
a
I have to get
stand?
The sugar? What's that? Yeah, yeah. That's it.
yeah.
If you were kids, parent would tell you they have a crush on you, and they're trying to find an excuse for like getting your attention.
Yeah.
And being a dumb boy, you can only get negative attention. You can't put gum in your hair. So instead, he's doing verbal gum in your hair.
It is weird, obviously, but maybe Mary doesn't understand that we're Canadian. So that's just like water off a duck's back. Like that is like normal life here.
Right. That's like syrup off a goose.
That's
the Canadian expression.
If you insist.
Well, I'm sorry to have brought it up. Pardon moi.
Pardon moi. Sorry.
Comme si, comme ça.
Yeah, this is like, that's just my life growing up. That was a sort of like conversational gambits that you would get. Like no one criticizes you to your face here in Canada, but they'll comment about you. You to your face, they'll make comments to you, you know, like, say, for instance, you did get a haircut in winter, you know, someone might say, oh, I got a haircut. That's a weird time to get a haircut or something like that, you know, or didn't you get a haircut at Christmas? To someone like that, you know, like some sort of comment. It's like sort of a veiled criticism that you don't, but you can't really react to it because you're just like, well, no, because yeah. I.
Anything different about you would get a comment.
Yeah, yeah.
It was never a positive comment. Yeah,
yeah. Sure. Anything you did, you know, would get like a little kind of a little poke at you. And
for
stuff
a
like
very
that.
Brief period of time, the comeback of the year was this one. Hey, did you get a haircut? No, I got them all cut. Pretty good.
Comeback of the
strut.
Year.
Strut. Strut away. Zing. Zing, zing.
And I don't know if it's our British heritage. I was listening to someone talking, an Australian woman was talking, and she mentioned... she had a word for it, and I can't remember what the phrase was now.
Dingo baiting.
Not that, but nice try. No, it was something that was, it wasn't related to outdoors something, but it was like a thing like, basically like, this is not what it was, but kind of like whack-a-mole, like a whack-a-mole culture.
Okay.
Where anything that pops up gets batted back down.
Right.
You know, and that's basically.
The tallest nail. Yeah.
And that's basically Canada as well. You know, like if you pop up, someone's there to put you back down again,
sure.
to make you fit into like the norm. Like we want everyone to be in like this very wide swath of what we consider normality. And if you don't fit into that, then there's comments will be made that will kind of put you back down. And so, you know, that's, you know, so, you know, when I was growing up, like I didn't drink, you know, when I was a teenager, I didn't drink. So I wouldn't go to parties because it was just too awkward at parties to try and, you know, get past the different, you know, the abnormality of not drinking at a teenage party, you know, or my famous story of me walking down the street and the girl in the truck going through all kinds of configurations to turn back around so she can zip up beside me and demand I go to the bar with her, which I didn't do because then it's awkward and I have to explain that I don't drink. And I was over that. And so I was kind of like, nah, whatever is possibly going to happen with this isn't worth the trauma of having to explain that I don't drink, and it's not because, you know, this, that, and blah, 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 you know, it's, so it's just, no thanks. You know, like, I don't want to be the nail. I don't need to get hammered down.
Yeah.
Just keep on walking.
It's funny, the first example that she brings up is like, hey, don't you think sushi is overrated? I'm like, overrated? What's that mean? Like if someone had a peanut butter sandwich, and I was like, don't you think peanut butter is overrated?
Yeah.
Like, who's ranking these? What's it matter? Should I, are we doing the top sandwiches of the day? Like the top lunches? And like, oh, I'm not keeping up with the trends. And like, what do you mean? What? Like that to me feels like they must be trying to start a conversation with you, like later on, like hoping that will spark something. And then you're not interested. And so they get more frustrated and they get a little meaner and they get more frustrated.
Yeah,
and they're a little meaner.
I think you're putting too much nuance.
I mean, the other
doing.
Thing could be, you know, they're from that era, you know, which was the 80s era, at least, you know, which was the observational comic who's just like looking at the person going by and, you know, making fun of them for whatever they are. You know, it's the Woody Allen movie. Where him and the girl are like looking at people in the park and like just making fun of them.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like, yeah, you're an object to be made fun of. You're not a person. You're not a human person. So either it's one of two things. One, they are trying to work up the nerve to talk to you like a boy who like has like a crush on you and is like can't say anything, so is mean. Or, yeah, they just think of you as a non-person and you're something, you're an object to be made fun of. And in either way, ugh, on that knob.
I think it's just a passive-aggressive attack.
What do you think their end game is?
To make you uncomfortable.
Just a power move?
Yes, it's a power move. Yeah, exactly.
That could be, too. I never understand it. Like, I always think, like, there's got to be, like, an end to it. Like, you want to break their spirit because why? You're trying to neg them so, you know, then you can now make your move and just go, you know, oh, that's an ugly dress. Hey, you know, there's a dance tonight. Do you want to go to that dance now that your spirit's a little broken and you think you're not better than me? Yeah.
I mean, it's possible, but...
We're against them, is what we're saying.
I work with a lot of people where I work.
Right.
So you do get different types of personalities, you know. One of the guys that I work with is very ambitious. He's very ambitious, and he's pretty much made it clear to me that he wants my job. He'll often stand while I'm working on my computer doing stuff. He'll stand behind me to watch what I'm doing.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know if he's like, oh, I'll just figure out what Dave does, and I can do his job. Which is whatever. I just don't like people standing behind me while I do stuff.
Yeah.
How am I supposed to go on the internet and look at porn? And then...
I just want to look at the same porn you do.
Oh, well, that's fine then. Not uncomfortable at all. But he'll also like...
A lot of mascot.
Wherever he is...
Guy. He likes people dressed as Donald Duck.
Maybe. Wherever he is or wherever he was, you'll know he was there because there'll always be a mess.
Okay.
Or he'll leave things in people's way. Mm. Like he'll have like a big lift of stuff and then suddenly it's like in the doorway. You're like... Or he'll park a forklift. Like often he'll know, like I assume people, maybe he doesn't realize, but you know, like we know there's a trailer coming that day and the trailer will come and he's parked a forklift in front of where the trailer's going to be. So you're just like, why would you? Okay. I mean, it's fine, I guess. I don't know why you need all this attention all the time, but that's fine. You're here.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for letting us know.
Thumbs up.
So it's weird to me.
You're right. They're a jerk. There you go. Thank you for writing. It was good to hear from you. And we hope we can see you in person again soon.
Of course, my reaction when Mary wrote was, Mary still listens to the show?
Mm.
That's great.
I'm surprised I do.
do you?
Last week on the show, I'll see if I remember these questions. Do you have a guilty pleasure movie which you wouldn't normally like but really enjoy? And what's your favorite fictional mystery? And what is your favorite real-life mystery? Oh, these are excellent questions. Let's see if they're answered. Our friend Louise writes, since Ian is watching The West Wing, this is true, I hereby nominate Aaron Sorkin's 1995 political rom-com, The American President, as my guilty pleasure movie. I don't usually like films that are so idealistic about American politics, but I did enjoy it as an escapist fantasy. It's like the unofficial pilot for the TV series. A lot of the same themes and characters pop up, even some of the actors. And in honor of Dave's birthday this week, for a running mate, I'll recommend a less guilty pleasure, the more cynical 1993 political rom-com, Dave.
Yeah,
yeah,
it's not good. A bad movie with Kevin Kline.
Yeah, I tried watching American President recently, and because I'm watching West Wing, I couldn't watch it.
Okay.
Because it was so much like, this is the pilot.
The pilot for it, yeah.
Yeah, and much more basic than it was. The only thing was like, oh, you can afford an outdoor set. Good for you, because it's that.
Yeah.
And I forgot that it was Rob Reiner that directed it back when he directed everything.
The American President.
Yes.
Oh, I didn't know that.
FYI, I wasn't in the first production of Suspect with the great Colin Mochrie. I played the maid in a remount where the roles were double and triple cast. Okay, fair enough. Jim and Jerry, who were two other improvisers,
yep,
alternated in the victim detective role. The maid was not a suspect, so I didn't have to stay on stage during the intermission, and luckily could head downstairs to powder my nose, literally and figuratively. Okay, well, there you go.
Thanks for the cocaine reference.
Right, well, that was the time.
Totally, yeah.
Yeah, there was a lot of blow in comedy back then.
Sure, we know it.
Yeah. Yeah, they would say that at the end of like the first half was like, well, time to take a break and do some blow. And they come back up and like, the teams have switched places to minimize wind advantage. And everyone goes, still fresh. And then one more toot and off to the races. sorry. God damn it. She's now doing a cocaine joke in her tag.
Always.
I know.
I'm sorry.
We should read these in advance. We're dinks. We're total dinks.
Sorry, Louise.
So, yeah. Clarify, I was powdering my nose with cosmetic face powder. No other powders were involved, I swear. I'm so sorry for Dave.
I was the one who said it. I just didn't.
Anyway. Edward Drygansky replies to Luis, thanks for reminding me of The American President. What a great movie with a cast that had just the right balance to it. Douglas and Benning shined with the supporting cast doing just that in the best way. Love that movie. Oh, and Dave's birthday is this week. Is this when he catches up with me? Make those wishes count, young man, and have a happy birthday.
I'm 58 this year.
Feeling great.
I don't know where that falls in your on your spectrum.
59, age. Feeling fine.
You're 59?
No. Me?
I know you're not.
I would have really screwed up in school. But yeah, so that's another vote for The American President. And yeah. Annette Bening, who recently saw in NIAID.
After you slammed it so hard.
Slam.
I guess maybe we should read this.
What I really liked, though, was Michael J. Fox as, I think, the George Stephanopoulos.
George Stephanopoulos, sure.
Yeah. Character. Mm-hmm. Was like, oh, yeah. Which I think then got him the Spin City.
Probably, yeah.
Series. Everyone got work out of that.
Yeah.
Good for them. Edward, I wonder if they reused the White House set. By the way, it's so weird thinking like Rob Reiner directed that. The guy who did Spinal Tap. Directed yep. that.
Sure.
Also, directed Harry Met Sally.
Yeah.
Also, Princess Bride. Yeah. It was like this.
That was a hot time for him.
Good God. What a window.
Then he directed, what was it, North? And that kind of caused everything to fall
who
apart.
Who fucking cares? So you get one stinkeroony?
Yep.
Who cares? Like
Hollywood cares.
You've done Princess Bride and Spinal Tap.
Yeah.
And when Harry Met Sally. Like all these that are just like, kaboom.
And The Sure Thing, which is another good movie.
Oh, that's right.
John Cusack.
Edward Drygansky writes his own darn letter. Love all the John Byrne talk, guys. I have some really fun memories of Byrne, who Canadian, got to say that, because we're Canadian, who was and still is one of my favorite comic illustrators of all time. The first time I met John Byrne was at Dallas Comic Con, my first con I ever attended. My dad had to drive me to the hotel since I was 16 and wasn't driving yet. As I entered and took it all in, I was overwhelmed by the initial experience. I saw Byrne at his table with all his drawing pencils and paper laid out, a huge sign that said, "No X-Men sketches, please," hung over his table, since he had just recently started the Fantastic Four book and was no longer doing X-Men. Then I felt a hot panic come over to me, and I ran to the men's room and I threw up. Once I gathered myself, I approached Byrne and asked how much a sketch would cost. I was thinking it would have been $25 or $30 per figure, but it was about that much. So just the thing, I decided. I watched him draw this sketch, and it was like watching the gods create life. I almost couldn't believe my eyes. I still have the sketch, so I'll post it on Facebook for you to see. It's from 1982, and I keep it put away for fear of it fading. Speaking of Byrne leaving the X-Men, the Christmas issue with Kitty Pryde and the Alien was his final issue, issue 143. I also really enjoyed Paul Smith's work on X-Men down the line when he took over. He had a really clean style. A few years later, John Byrne came to Lone Star Comics right before I started working there. I sculpted a small bust of the Thing out of Sculpey to show to Byrne. He took it and looked it over quietly and asked, "Can I have this?" I didn't expect that, and I was sure I could make myself another one, but I gave it to him. In return, he signed a stack of comics for me, and I'd like to think in those photos of his crowded studio, my sculpture is lost somewhere in there.
That's nice.
I'm just glad I didn't throw up this time. Those were the days when Lone Star hosted a lineup of A-list professionals like Byrne, Walt and Louise Simonson, Terry Austin, and Chris Claremont, to name a few.
Wow.
That all changed after owner Buddy Saunders wrote his article in the Comics Journal and guests declined our invitations. I mentioned last time that Buddy's article in the Comics Journal had resulted in a backlash, but it only really extended to the industry-level crowd who read the journal religiously. The article didn't really hurt sales or drive away customers. Buddy didn't even sell the Comics Journal in our store, so I don't think the backlash extended that far. I do, however, remember Buddy taking certain measures to keep mature comics out of the reach of younger viewers, so he had some tactics in place instead of just banning the books altogether. He didn't shoot himself in both feet. Then, Frank Miller did The Dark Knight Returns and agreed to come to all of our stores for a signing. The only reason Miller agreed to come was because he was scouting locations in Texas for RoboCop 2, and that's all the man could talk about was the movie and how great it would be. Miller was very generous signing everything we gave him, and met every last guest, even though he was high as a fucking kite. There was a catch, however. Only the first three issues of The Dark Knight Returns had been published at this point, and due to the timing of Miller being in Texas, only those three were signed. The fourth and final issue was released shortly after Miller's visit. I'm guessing to this day, collectors have their full set of four comics with only the first three signed by Miller. Great times.
Great series.
I remember you redrawing the cover to, I think, the second issue.
I did a few drawings from that. I really liked that style you used in that book. Well, Klaus Janson, too. I thought both of them. And Lynn Varley. Great book.
I really don't take in that many romantic comedies or dramas in the theater, but I will watch them on television. There's one guilty pleasure romantic drama comedy I'll watch every time, The Devil Wears Prada. I don't know why I like it, but I do. I know nothing about that way of life or the fashion industry, but the parts are played so well by everyone in the cast. And I do love Stanley Tucci in just about everything. He's one of the best. The movie is so far from everything else, I just have some weird affinity for it, I guess. And fictional mystery would have to be Sherlock Holmes, even though I don't really have a favorite. I know he's been handled by different productions over the years. My dad's was Basil Rathbone. I watched those with him when I was a kid. Which is the one? Oh yeah, what is your favorite version of Holmes? Mine, I like Benedict Cumberbatch. Sorry, being very basic.
I like Jeremy Brett.
But I also like what's the one where Sherlock Holmes comes to Canada and at the end praises Winston Churchill?
No idea.
He sings the praises of Winston Churchill.
It's probably
Churchill.
Basil Rathbone then.
Could be. Yeah, I'll try.
There are some wartime, like World War II era. Sherlock
I'll try
Holmes,
and find so. that clip.
Pretty ridiculous.
Real life mystery would have to be the JFK assassination. The events surrounding it still fascinate me, and I'll listen to any podcast or read any book about it, even though the mystery will probably never be solved. After all, I do live in Dallas.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Yeah. Never seen the Mummy trailer before. Oof, that was bad. And remember, sneakers, to love and hug your pets and one another out there. Thank you so much. We will. Marcus Will Harwell.
Oh, okay. He wrote an email, but that's interesting.
He wrote two letters here.
Wow.
And then an email.
Wow.
For the hat trick. That's what we call it in Canada.
Trying to throw my hat on the ice.
Way back in the mid-90s, when we were constantly struggling with low orders for gray matter. Yay, gray matter. And desperately trying to get retailers to take a chance on us. Lone Star Comics was one of our most generous and faithful supporters. I'm sure Buddy ordered more than he needed most every time, and I will be forever grateful to him for believing we had something worth carrying. Regarding other less pleasant topics, the foot washing ad is notable for consistently showing white people of privilege humbling themselves to people of color and assumed marginalized. Jeez. A very noblesse oblige.
Definitely, there's definitely that to it as well. But.
Question of the week. I didn't think much of the North Shore when the trailers hit. Seemed another crappy teen beach film, but a year or two later, I found it just starting on TV one afternoon and was delightfully surprised the longer I watched. It's actually a thoughtful Bildungsroman. Is that right?
Sure. Bildungsroman? Yeah, a little German there for you.
Yeah. Set in Hawaii that doesn't ignore the damage wrought by colonialism or cultural barriers. Many members of the pro surfing community were involved and imbue the story with the spiritual heart of surf culture. And the film highlights the bonds formed by friendship and between teacher and student. Love doesn't end up conquering all, and that rings true. The ending satisfies anyway. Okay, it's kind of cheesy at times, but that doesn't change its earnest goodwill. And sub-question of the week, favorite fictional mystery is probably still Dirk Gently's Holistic Detective Agency. Favorite real mystery, what the hell is consciousness, and what are its limitations? Oh, I also forgot to mention, for any Kids in the Hall fans, my find of the week was Bruce McCullough uploading part one of his show with Kevin MacDonald at the Rivoli Theater in Toronto from last July, I think, and we have a link there as well.
Oh, great.
Very nice.
Thanks for that.
Kevin MacDonald is the only Kids in the Hall member I have not yet met.
Huh.
I would like to meet him. He seems good. I like him a lot.
Well, you can never have enough.
Can't get enough
Will
of
Harwell.
That, Will Harwell.
So Will wrote to our email, which is sneakyd@sneakydragon.com, everybody.
Okay.
And his subject is a catch-up comment from SD episode 636. He says, "Hello from email land. I wasn't quick enough to get to this before yet another show emerged like a weekly sunrise into my podcast feed, but I meant to mention, Regarding Harry Harrison's Stainless Steel Rat series, I found the paperback single edition of the first three books somewhere around my sophomore year of high school. That's year two, Ian.
Okay.
And it quickly became my favorite example of the steely-eyed, swashbuckling space opera genre. They're pretty much the only books of the type I was interested in. No Heinlein, Doc Smith, or much of the Golden Age, save Bradbury. Later, almost nothing Bain would publish. I tended toward the squishy and surreal, Ellison and Le Guin and Delaney. I have not read Ellison or Delaney. Ellison I find a little off-putting as a person.
Okay.
And Delaney I don't really know, but I do love Le Guin. Le Guin and Silverberg, those are my my go-to science fiction. But these page burners I positively devoured. I read and reread that 3-in-1 volume so many times it started falling apart and I had to buy a new copy. I'm not entirely sure why they're so singular for me. I just enjoyed living in Slippery Jim DeGree's head as he subverts, machinates, blunders, and triumphs. They are much less sexist and authoritarian than a lot of that wing of science fiction from the 60s, with some decent humor and twisty plots. Like most classic SF, it's horribly dated now, with wires and tapes and barely capable computers, but still worth a read, I feel, if you like that sort of ridiculously capable, but imperfect, straight, but not too narrow, cishet first-person narrator. I really enjoyed the fourth book too, but by number five, it seemed like Harry was running low on inspiration for his indefatigable hero becoming fatigued, was one might say, though you wouldn't hear such a terrible pun from me. I must have read it wrong. Sorry, let me read that again.
Sure.
Running low on inspiration for his indefatigable hero becoming fatigued, one might say, though you wouldn't hear such a terrible pun from me. Marcus Will. And that's because Will used to write as Marcus Harwell, but at some point he went back to his actual name of Will.
Right. For reasons. And he had the right to, because he had the willpower.
He did explain the reasons, but my goodness, that was a while ago. Thank you so much, Will, for writing that. It was a very enjoyable read. I got to read Machinates, which is a fun word, and also Indefatigable. Indefatigable? It's a hard word to say if you say it too quickly. All right. Hey. That's it for letters.
Hey is for horses. We've read our email already from Mary. That was our one email, right?
Our email from
Mary Hook. That was it, right?
Email. That was from Marcus.
No. But we read earlier.
Oh, that was a thing that she sent on Facebook.
Oh,
Facebook.
Very good. And one of the many ways you can contact us.
Yeah. I actually wanted to say that because I was looking back at it. Let me go back to that. And she said, please, this was in all caps, by the way, answer this question on this week's show. I'm dying. And she put that in all caps to hear what you guys would advise. We did talk about it, Mary. I don't know if it was such a question. It was more like he was just telling a story about a jerk at his work. And so I think we did talk about it.
I would say ignore because they want attention. You know, there's no reason to.
Yeah, I guess that would be the. I mean, yeah. I mean, my move would be to leave the company and go get another job. But,
right.
You know, then that person would win.
I would say a good move is to smash a door, write a letter. Dave's got one on file he can just give you. And then resign.
Yes, I do have a stock resignation letter that I keep for any occasion. Dear blank, please forgive me for blank.
Do you think sushi is overrated? I don't. I think sushi rules. Yay, sushi. And I'm breaking this door. In protest. Yours in Christ.
Washing feet.
Taking names. Stealing shoes.
What? Sandals.
Ha-ha! Off I go!
Someone made a point that what kind of separates those things as well is that in the time of Christ, people's feet were really dirty because they did wear sandals.
Yeah.
And they lived in a world that was very dirty because they had horses and they had other, animals walking up and down the street, making a mess. I can't remember, the guy who was talking about this said that in Chicago, I don't know if it was daily, might have been daily, might have been weekly, but they removed 300 tons of horse manure from the streets of Chicago in the peak days of carts and dray horses and all the rest of it. And that's amazing. So you can imagine what a filthy place it was. Now, transport yourself back to Roman times in Jerusalem with people walking around in sandals and their feet getting dirty from all the various things in the street and whatnot. And then Christ washed those feet.
Yep.
There you go.
He washed those feet in ancient times. Getting between the toes.
He massaged their heel and tickled their feet.
Yeah. They went, Jesus Christ.
Yes.
So listen, we got to come up with questions for next week, and I'm going to say this because I was mentioning that I'm currently enjoying Hannah Gatsby's book, 10 Steps to Nanette. What's your favorite autobiography? Autobiography.
Oh, that's a good question.
Yeah.
My question is, what is your
favorite? Don't sound so damn surprised that I came up with a good question. What?
You?
You? Dum-dum Dugan over here.
Yeah. Let me just ask my question. What's your favorite biography? No, I think actually my question is going to be for the cinephiles out there, the cineasts. I've only read that word. Please don't judge me. There's a lot of good movies coming out in the next little while. What are you looking forward to seeing?
Okay.
Let me know.
By the way, did you see Madame Web?
I have not seen Madame Web. I'm waiting for it to show up in the Cottonwood. And it will, because they were playing the trailer there. Because right. They know that movie's going to tank, and then it'll be out of the theater real quick. People will be wanting to see it anyway.
Here's what steams my clams and why I'm not going to see it now. I was going to see it. And then I kind of like heard a little bit about it. And they're doing what Morbius did.
Okay.
Which was they put in scenes that are like in the tag. And they put in scenes that are kind of in the end, in the trailer, that aren't in the movie, really. And it's just like, it makes it seem like in the movie is this. And it's like, no. You just put a bunch of exciting shit in that they put at the end of the movie that doesn't do anything. And it's like, well, this is very close to lying. Very close to lying.
It's called sales, sir.
Yeah. It's like if you had, so here's what it's like. If it was like Batman Begins, the Christopher Nolan movie.
Yes.
And like you have a scene in the trailer where...
And it made it look like the movie was entertaining.
Whoa! I enjoyed the film. But like if you had if they showed like the final kind of scene, you know, where, there's a guy, he's a crazy guy, he's killing people. And like brings out the Joker card. And you had that in that trailer. Mm. And you had it near the beginning of the trailer. And he's like, It'd be like, so the Joker's in this movie. Oh, well, that's interesting. I'm going to watch this movie. Yeah, and then at the end, nothing happens. And at the very end of the movie, they go like, hey, you know, the Joker's this guy.
Yeah.
Like, the end. And it's like, that's bullshit.
Can I give you a better example?
Please.
Because it's more, if they use that ending scene from the Batman, the Robert Pattinson one of like the Joker in the jail. And that trailer is like the lead in for the trailer. And then, you know, kind of fudged showing who the actual villain was through the rest of it. Yeah, I know. I mean, I agree with you, and it is tantamount to lying, tantamount to advertising, I guess.
I wrote a letter back in the day, and I'll see if I can remember this and get it to you.
Did you sign it TM Maple?
I did not, which was the Mad Maple. I wrote a letter to Roger Ebert when he had like a thing called the Movie Answer Man.
Okay.
And I wrote in about Highlander 4 and the trailer for that and the amount of things that were in that trailer that were not in the movie at all.
Yeah.
And then I found out that they were shot just for the trailer.
Oh, that's not so good.
And it was like, well, this is all lies. And I said, how far does a movie have to go before it's like, it's a lie. Like, this is a con job.
Yeah.
He responded to that. So I will try to find you that clip and we'll put that up on our Sneaky Dragon site. And we'll see.
Please do.
Yeah, this is nice.
It does happen. I mean, like, I know with, before the film is even completed, they're making the trailer. And so there can be scenes that can get into the trailer that will be cut from the film for various reasons. And that can happen.
It can, but it's like this dink move. It's like Shazam 2. Did you see Shazam 2?
I did not bother.
Are you going to see Shazam 2?
Maybe I might.
All right. Well,
fine. You're not going to spoil
anything. There's a
thing
in the trailer where, you know, they have like him talking to Wonder Woman and they're like having a little
Wonder Woman.
Yap between the two of them. And it's at the very end of the movie. It's just this little kind of cute tag. But you're basically seeing everything from the cute tag in the trailer, implying that Wonder Woman's in this movie.
Yeah.
And you just saw it all. You saw it all. And also, there's a thing, like, when it's all leading to this, you know, thing at the end of the movie, it's like, I wonder how he's going to get out of this one. well, Wonder Woman, because we saw the trailer.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, it's Wonder Woman. And I was like, yeah, no shit. No shit, it's fucking Wonder Woman. It's like, yeah, she's there for like half a second.
Yeah.
And they did the same thing with the Flash movie. It's like, oh, there's Wonder Woman. Yeah, yeah. Same amount of time. She shows up after shit happened and goes, oh, hey, boys, how's it going? Well, my job here is done. You've done nothing. Bye. And flies off.
You're just making a good argument for why I don't bother watching trailers for the most part.
Okay. Well, if trailers are liars, then boo.
I am going to go see Drive Away Dolls this weekend, though.
Okay, good.
That sounds fun. Ethan Coen's new film.
Sounds good.
Without his brother.
All right, and it's one of the real Coens. It's not the Garfield one.
What?
There's a guy, I think it was Joel Coen, who directed the Garfield movie. And that's why Bill Murray agreed to it. Because like, oh, it's a Joel Coen movie. And so he thought it was going to be interesting. And then got there, I was like, it's a different guy. He spells his name differently. Like, okay. Ooh, which doesn't explain why he then did the sequel.
Probably signed a contract.
I guess maybe. Or maybe you know.
His agent negotiated a super payout for him.
That is also
But you got to do the second movie, Bill.
The money does clear. Yeah,
the money is nice.
But if you want to write to us, please do so at sneakyd@sneakydragon.com. Or go to, as many people now do, all the fanciest people go to Facebook. And you can post something on there. Or you can go to Tumblr. That still exists. sneakydragon.tumblr.com. X. Which used to be Twitter when it was better, sneaky_dragon, or hey, look, this is our personal favorite. Go to sneakydragon.com. What do you get there? Well, first, you get every episode of this show. Underneath every one of those, there's a little message board area. You can post whatever you want. By the way, we got so many other podcasts going on there. We got your Totally Tintins. We got your Full Marxists. We got your Completely Beatles. And we got new stuff, too, like Horse Mysteries. And refresh my memory. So, hey, why not check that out? See what's new on our website, sneakydragon.com. I've been Ian Boothby.
I've been David Dedrick.
Take care of yourselves. Stay healthy. We think you're swell.